there's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
If I had clown music to play in Jack's brand, that is how we would start today, because we're all fired up this morning. Welcome to our first Tuesday coffee chat. I am here with John Willis from Special Operations Equipment. Hey, what's that shirt?
It says, I don't know what he just said, and I really don't think he does either.
Okay, we got Jack Spierko. What shirt are you in today?
This is the one that says, if you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. It's also from John's shop.
Yep, and I'm Nicole Soss from Living Free in Tennessee.
Oh.
Tread on those who tread on you.
Heemeyer.
Yeah. I almost ended up in the same shirt as Jack today. It was very close.
It's weird how that happens. I have a closet with 800 shirts, and I'll pull one just out of the middle, and randomly Amanda will have the exact same one, and so will half the shop.
Yeah, I think it's just in the air sometimes. Okay, yeah. Well, so how about that debate?
What debate?
How about that show that we clown circus we had last week?
It gave us a lot of talking points. I mean, we're almost sold out of this shirt. I mean, that was an immediate. We've got another one behind it. It's a trip. When Amanda launches the text message last night, people who have never replied before will take issue with the shirt and the whole thing. But they've never purchased anything. I don't even know how they're on my text app. It's just bizarre that they come out of the woodwork for it.
Yeah, there are only a lot of people on device like, business, I'll never buy anything for, from
and if you're
you.
Not on the team, they are mad. And then the guys that are on no team are super mad that you're utilizing the team.
Yeah, that they just don't, I don't know. It's people looking to be mad get attracted to keywords or served up stuff by the algorithms. And I think that's why I had that. I showed you that one crazy comment on Facebook or YouTube that I got.
Yep.
That's somebody who doesn't like gay people. He thought I was a lesbian. We finally figured it out. He thought I was a lesbian, and the Christian men in my audience should be ashamed for even listening to me. And also women aren't supposed to teach. And I was like, well, why are you here then? Watching this person you disapprove of.
After 15 years on YouTube, the algorithm has finally got him to comment for the first time.
Yep. So Jack, what's new with you this week?
Oh, I'm just trying to make sense of the clown world that we are in, because as bad as I thought it was, what I just watched, and I'm not talking about the fact that Biden is incompetent, it's the reaction to it that has been, like, bizarre. Like, I think what happened, like, if anybody that watched the debate and watched the coverage, like, of MSNBC and CNN after the fact, they were in crisis meltdown mode, right? They were like, oh, we got to get rid of them. We got to get rid of them. Somebody in power, right, said, hey, idiots, it's not that simple. Stop it. And all of a sudden, like, the apparatus flipped on its head. And by the next day, we were saying, well, Biden really won the debate. Trump is really the one with dementia. The entire message changed because I think it was so bad. I mean, let's be honest. All those fuckers knew what they were doing in hiding this for years, right? They were lying to people blatantly to their face. And there were enough people that wanted to believe the lie that believed the lie to preserve the lie. And it just fell apart and shattered. So their whole world shattered. So they went into like crisis meltdown. And I really believe what they were saying they believed at the time. And then the freaking shot collar went off and Gavin Newsom rolled out and said, hey, shut up. And all of a sudden the whole thing turned to actually it was a bad debate, but it was just one bad night.
Same group of people that said black folks don't know how to use the internet. I mean, maybe they actually believe that they're putting that out there. Maybe they believe that people actually didn't see the debate and they will put their line out saying Trump has dementia.
I was looking at Trump. Not Trump, but Biden talking from 4 years ago. And having not really thought about that for 4 years and having seen him say some things recently, I don't know how you don't see that. Like, he's so far gone in recent speeches that you would think they would have had a better plan if they actually want to win the election.
Mm. Yeah, Nicole and I were talking about that before you jumped on with us, John, pre-show, that, like, if you're following the Ted Kaczynski manual, mm-hmm. this is not the time you want to take over.
Yeah.
Right. Ted Kaczynski's manifesto. Uncle Ted said, you do not want to be in charge when everything falls apart, because then you get all the blame, whether you did it or not. And looking ahead, I can see a lot of things falling apart. I actually think a second Trump administration will give you momentary financial relief.
You're going to have four
forcing down of interest rates. There'll be unleashing of American energy, optimism, blah, blah, blah. But I said yesterday on my show, that window is going to be fucking brief. And if you've like been waiting to do something, if it happens, do it. Don't think it's going to last, because I can't see it lasting at this point.
You're going to have 4 years to shore up your defenses, shore up your dam, or move out of the floodplain, because everything is going to destroy after that. And they are going to come after, like if they're coming after, they're creeping down that line. They went after a president. Now they're after media creators. They're already knocking on doors of people who said things on the internet. They are going to come for you.
So tangibly, what do you think that looks like? Shoring up things. I mean, obviously getting out of the city, but for folks who are just waking up, how much can you build in 4 years? You know, objectively speaking, because I know John would say the more money you have, the easier you are have it when you come into the situation. Right, John?
Yeah. I mean, I spent a long time, 20 years waiting for society to collapse and didn't build things, right? I was one of those dudes that's, I'm not going to make more money because they're going to take it in taxes, or I'm not going to buy property because of, you know, property taxes. I was that dipshit. And really, 10 years ago, I got served. One of my guys, reposted one of our first videos when we were walking around this property, looking at the property. That was 10 years ago. I've been saying we've been on this property for 7 years. It's actually been 10 years now. And if you look at what we did on this place, we took the worst possible piece of property you could get and turned it into this. It's still got a long ways to go, but if push come to shove, we could produce all of our food here, or the largest majority of it. I mean, we've got the water catchment in place. We've got the food production in place. We've got topsoil now. And we did it on a literally a gravel pit. Like, we walked onto dirt and chert and put this together part time, literally just a couple hours a day, built this out of it. So imagine if we'd have really knuckled down for a couple years, which we did in 2019. We shut the whole production line down for 2 weeks and put in a ton of infrastructure, paid all of our employees not to come to work for 2 weeks, and just started going. And I mean, that's right when we had that first party also, Nicole. We had the first, which was really the catalyst to SRF. And everybody came in and they're like, hey, we want to see the ducks. We want to see the chickens. We want to see the rabbits. We want to see the water. And that's when we realized, man, there's really something to this. So, I mean, I have a template. I don't tell people what to do. I tell them what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And real quick, John, how big is the area like where all your livestock are? I know you have a 10-acre property, but the area you're actually working with is not that big, 3 acres.
Yeah, we're utilizing 3 acres. Like if they said we're shutting down interstate commerce, we would utilize this whole entire parking area. I mean, and that would give us several more acres.
Yeah, so something about how you do homesteading or how you raise food that I think people don't appreciate when they see it is that everything you've figured out for running your factory, like how to get things into an assembly line, how to maintain quality, how to pump out as much as you can with the time you have and the resources you have, when you apply that to food, means you do the same thing there.
And we have I do all this shit myself. Like, that's not to take away from my guys. Like, my guys come out when I need work done or I need construction. I have guys that can do that. I could utilize, I've got 5 dudes on staff at any time that we could put fully into outside facilities, but they don't do any of that stuff. I do all of that in under an hour every day. And really, push come to shove, I can take care of everything that has to be done in the day in about 25 minutes right now.
I've seen you do it. I didn't know that the first time I came up there. I figured with all the people you had working for you, you'd be like, okay, you go take care of the birds. You go take care of the rabbits for me. You're doing everything yourself. And you've lined it out, like Nicole says, in a way that you basically make a lap and you're done.
And I have no automation. Like, everything, I listen to everything you say, and I'm like, yeah, I should probably do that. And I don't have any automated waters. I fill water bottles with a hose or from pitcher still. And I'm terrible at allocating. I'm terrible at delegating. Hey, you go do this, you go do this. I'm like, man, it's hot outside. That guy's going to think I'm an asshole if I put him out in 95 degree weather. Screw it. I'll just go do it myself. And I do all the time. And that's really my shortcoming, is that I don't, allocate task.
I will say that the automation is great, but the other side of it is, if you fully automate things, you don't spend enough time in an observational state. And so you don't see things that are going to become a problem before they become a problem. So even though I talk about automation a lot, most of my automation is like semi-automatic. It's fully semi-automatic, like my irrigation system. I could automate it to where a solenoid did the work. Instead, I have to go out there, turn four knobs, and walk away. Well, every time I walk out there, I see everything between myself and my garden, and I see my garden.
And that came from the reptile house, right? I had thousands of snakes.
Yeah.
Over 1,000 and 2 full-time reptile guys. And we were producing hundreds of rats every week. And we would have 5-gallon water on top, 5-gallon buckets that would come through lines into lickers. Well, as soon as you get a rat out and it chews that line, it drips into that tray. And you got about half a day until those rats drowned.
Okay.
And that water will water those rats for 5 days. So if you just go in there every 5 days, when you have a problem, you have a big problem. You've got these huge, bloated, rotted, nasty, stinking rats. And that's where that came from, is because, and even paying guys, I had a reptile keeper from Chicago Zoo, and I had Nicolas Cage's reptile guy moved here from Las Vegas, 2 full-time guys. And if you don't go check on your employees, and these are good dudes, but if you don't go check on them, animals die. They do not tell you. There is no oversight. I go in the middle of the night, and the snake room is just wrecked. There's shedding all over the floor where they've pulled cages. There's poop on the floor. They just don't clean it up. If you don't check on them, eventually they just slow down on their tasks, and they don't do what you're paid for. So I'm just like, man, I'll just do it myself.
Hey, John, just totally side right now. If you have a parent out there who has a kid that wants a big boid, like a full-size red tail or a retic or something like that, would you not advise them to have their kid go to some place where one already exists and clean up the soup can size shit out of one of those tanks before they buy one that's this big and wait for it to grow?
I would recommend that they buy one this big and make them grow that animal. As much as I handle snakes a lot, like every day touching, numbers of animals, when you get across the hand by a boa, I still have scars on my fingers.
Oh, yeah.
From just a Colombian that bit across my hand, and those needles, man, they touch the bone. It is, and you, when you get that little bacteria in there, man, I had an albino Mexican rosy boa, and that, like, you always hear, oh, rosy boas are so docile, man. I got bit more by rosy boas than anything, and I had my thumb was numb for 6 months when that stupid, there was some bacteria.
The thing that I had to bit me the most, I had a pair of spotted pythons that I was breeding.
Yep,
and they didn't hurt. They were just strike and let go, but they had their little caves. And if I did any work in that viv without removing the cave, if they see anything move outside, they instantly strike at it. They were like the bitiest little. But if you took them out, then you could hand it to a kid.
Yeah, like, amethyst pythons were the worst, man. But it's just high prey drive. When you have that many animals, when those breeding racks come open, they know food's coming in.
Yeah.
Like I never fed with tongs until maybe 10 years ago. And I've kept animals for, 50 years almost. And I never got bit. It's only when you become, that's why I didn't keep venomous animals. You become complacent with them.
Oh yeah. That's why I didn't do it. I knew I didn't have I've handled hots. I know what to do. I don't have the discipline to keep doing it and keep doing it the way it needs to be done.
Yeah, I got bit October 1st, 86, Southern Pacific rattlesnake, left thumb, full envenomation. And I kept rattlesnakes for years even after that. But, man, to deal with cobras or something, especially in a rural area where you're going to transport 90 minutes to any kind of anti-venom.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's get off the herpetology.
It's fine. I got nothing on snakes. Like,
John and I could do this for like 3 hours.
You and I know. We actually should do an episode sometime.
Show?
Yeah.
Just like as an outtake type thing or something.
Yeah,
like,
because people are so interested in it. You'd have a complete different audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Okay, so Thomas Massey's wife died last week.
I feel sad for him. Sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm guessing cancer because I didn't really see the cause, but at her age, I would think.
He pointedly did not say the cause, and yeah. In her obituary, they mentioned that she had been sick for years.
I saw John Moody put out a big post on that yesterday about that.
Yeah. But, yeah, so anybody who has interacted with him, sending an email with condolences, even though he doesn't know who you are, can help if you want to do something. But
he's a good dude, too. I hate all the Congress clowns, but if I was going to make a list of ones that I don't hate, he's on it. I mean, he's probably the best advocate the country has in Congress.
Yeah, he put forth a bill that said all bills should be one line. He put forth another bill that said the Department of Education will be dissolved on this date. Of course, they never went out anywhere, but he's authoring them.
Yeah, he's been all pushing the Crime Act for many years, which is putting food freedom back at the state level.
He's a huge
food freedom advocate.
And to have a man at his level with his audience speak, he's brought a lot of awareness to all the nonsense that's going on with the FDA.
Yeah. And he lives in an off-grid house that he built.
100% off-grid. He holds, I think, dozens of patents. He's automated. He's got a chicken tractor that drives itself for 12 days. It'll move itself. He's done all kinds of just great stuff.
Yep. So anyway, so that was sad. I thought we'd mention it today. When it was announced, I heard a lot of conspiracies about it, and that's kind of been a race since the announcement, since the obit went out. So, but I don't know. It can be real hard to know how to support somebody like that who's a public figure, and I just think sending an email is a good idea. So what do you guys want to talk about next?
I don't know, man. You brought the whole mood down.
Oh, I killed it.
John and I were talking about snakes. I was going to tell my story about getting bit by a copperhead, and you just threw death in there. Mine was a legitimate bite, by the way.
Well, okay, but death is related to copperhead.
Mine was legitimate. I reached in a bag and picked it up out of there.
You were messing with the snake.
Did you get on the antivenom for that, John?
Yeah, six bottles of antivenom overnight. Crofab. Even back then.
So if you've already had that once, does that mean then the next time you can't do it? Is that how that works?
No.
No, but it also doesn't mean you're immune to it either.
There's different reactions. Some people that don't have a reaction to it the first time do the second, and some do develop some immunity. It's a toss-up. You don't know. I mean, for every beekeeper that doesn't even react to a bee sting anymore, you have a beekeeper that quit because they can't get stung anymore.
There's people that don't know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but a Southern Pacific, yeah, I mean, if he didn't get crowfab, what would have happened is wherever you were bit would have probably started to look like you had worms inside you or something after a while because it's a – so most snakes are either hemotoxic or neurotoxic, and SOPACs are both. So you've got neurotoxin and hemotoxin going together, and I've seen bites where it literally looks like a dude got bit on the leg, and it looked like his leg was full of maggots, and it was just muscle twitches.
Yeah, I had full envenomation, 18-inch animal, so it dosed really good, fully into the thumb. I was home, rode my bicycle home about 5 minutes. Mom was pulling up. I said, Mom, I've been bit by a rattlesnake. We got to go to the hospital. Take me to Sharp. And we were there in about 30 minutes. And I remember kind of being a little short of breath, but I think it was probably just, worry and concern over it. And I'm like, Mom, run the red light. And got there, and my thumb was probably at least twice as big as it was or should have been. And it was starting to bruise that quick.
Will the flesh go necrotic at that point if you don't get...
No, but it will eventually swell up. And they do what's called a fasciotomy. I didn't have one, but they open it up to relieve the pressure. They actually make it an incision. Eventually it would rot really down. You just have a skeleton bone. It would just rot away.
Interesting. Okay, question. I heard somebody mention the coming famine in a video. Thoughts on that?
I saw some interesting stuff. I follow these guys on Instagram and TikTok, and they're farmers, and they always just have interesting takes on things. And they're like, somebody had said something about the cost of, oh man, tractors are expensive. You know, you tractor costs $100,000. He's like, $100,000. He goes, this tire costs $100,000. And he was saying, you know, with all of the stuff going on in Ukraine, because it's all farming and all the farming is supposedly shut down in Ukraine and all the wheat comes out of Europe comes from Ukraine. He said, you know, I really expected our commodities prices to change and they have not. So I question what's really happening there. If all of the wheat coming into the United States is supposedly being bought up and shipped to Europe and shipped to China, especially, why are these prices not moving at all?
Because the summation that the farming is shut down in Ukraine is bullshit.
That's what he's.
So the war is in the Donbas region.
Yeah.
They don't farm shit in the Donbas region. It's all industrial. It's all mining and minerals, which and is why they're fucking fighting over it, right? Like, it has no value other than, like, I think Lindsey Graham just let it out. It's like $13 trillion in minerals in the ground in the Donbas, and we can't have it. That's what this fucking war is really about, because politically, if you're Zelensky, the smartest thing you could have done is let it go. Because at that point, it would be like Texas and Florida leaving the United States. You would never have a Republican president ever again. Right? I mean, or we take some major sea change in. So if you take that piece of the electorate out of Ukraine, Zelensky's party is in power for 50 years or more.
There's a ton of video.
Why would you prevent that? It has no, but there it is. It's all about money. And I'll tell you what I think comes next there. They have fucking decimated. Worse than decimated. Decimated 1 in 10. They have destroyed and butchered an entire generation of men in Ukraine. They do not have the physical labor necessary to rebuild the country. But BlackRock has the money.
Yep.
And what they're going to do is they're going to import fuckloads of immigrants out of the rest of Europe. Because Europe's like, fuck, we didn't really know what we were doing when we did this. Now this is a, holy shit, they're burning Paris. Like, I know.
Yeah,
Send them to Ukraine and put them to work. That's what they're going to do.
Yep, we're going to take all your knife stabbers and all your monument burners, and that's what's going to populate that whole area and rebuild it. They already have the contracts to BlackRock.
Yep. And then at the same time, you've ripped what was left of Western culture out of Ukraine.
Yep.
Right? And then you're putting this fucking hellscape between Russia and the rest of Western Europe. That's the plan. It's always been the plan. They will fight to the last Ukrainian to get the plan. And now they probably have until about January 20th to fully execute the plan and figure a way out of it, because Orange Man's going to shut the money faucet off. And Orange Man is, like, I would say 95% going to be president again.
And that's what he said. He goes, I'll take care of that before I'm even in office.
Yeah. And I think he will, because this is my understanding, and I do have, like, some back channel sources that say this is legit. He's not going to say, I'm cutting the money off. What he's going to say is, if you two motherfuckers don't start talking directly to each other, then I'm going to cut the money off. Which is, if you've read the art of the deal, that's straight out of the blueprint. Like, you have two sides that are, like, at odds with each other. You don't get in the fucking middle. You say, you guys figure this shit out. Mediating means I'll be here as a neutral third party. It doesn't mean I'll talk to you over here and you over here, and you guys have your own peace negotiations with countries that are not at war with you. That's fucking retarded. So I think that the minute they have to talk to each other and they realize, like, this can't go on forever, then you get into, like, I said this the day it started. Donbas is gone. Russia will never give it back, and they have way too much in it, and they don't have to, and there is no amount of force that will push them out of it. It just
It should have been Russia from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is Russian.
Yeah.
Like, so this is the other thing people don't, like, this is the history we don't
speak. They speak Russian.
But it's more than that, right? Why do they speak Russian? Because they are Russian. So, but how did it happen? So when the Soviet Union began to coalesce and they took these satellite republics like Ukraine, which, by the way, until after 1900 wasn't even a fucking country. It was just a region between Hungary and Poland that was fought over, and Russia. When they started saying, like, we're going to take Estonia, we're going to take Ukraine, we're going to make them part of the USSR. Remember that whole thing? Like, we're all old enough to remember when it was a thing. What Russia did was they actually extended the new republics into Russia proper, so that there would be a balance of ethnic Russians inside these republics. So the Donbas was Russia, and the Ukraine region was here. And when they took Ukraine into the Soviet Union, they extended the Donbas into Russia. Khrushchev is the one that did Crimea because he was from Ukraine and he wanted to retire to Crimea, and just out of his ego, he wanted Crimea to be part of Ukraine. So this is just, we're back to the same shit as it's always been, people playing with borders instead of letting them coalesce naturally around cultural things. And eventually you have to pay the band that you hired to do the show, right? So at some point, this has a cost. The Middle East is a perfect example. Every place we fuck with borders, this shit happens.
Well, they had an election, and then the CIA went in and overthrew that election. Yep. They changed that entire government. I mean, I'm curious to see what happens in France right now, because the right has taken over and everything's on fire, but it's the left burning it all down, right? So yeah. I'm curious to see what happens there. You're seeing this.
Well, have they actually taken over yet? Because didn't Macron call snap elections, but they haven't happened yet?
It happened. I believe it happened yesterday. That's what the news is saying.
No wonder they're losing. Is he out?
I believe that's the case. People are done with this.
Oh, shit.
They are done with this bullshit all over the world. Like, it's unraveling. Look at the tractor supply stuff. 200 million lost in a week period, and Tractor Supply came out and said, "Oh no, we're not doing this. Nope, we've been in business 85 years, and we're about American values." And they put that on their official Twitter as well as their website. They didn't remove the CEO, though. The CEO who got caught at Drag Queen Story Hour in Franklin, Tennessee. The CEO who, before he locked his page down, they screenshotted all of his shit out there, liking all the woke stuff and the child porn and all the crazy shit. But he's still in charge, but they don't have to remove him. They'll just, to the front, man, 99% of the population will go, "Oh, okay, we won."
They learned their lesson.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll go to Atwoods. I'm done.
Yeah, there's a guy named Robbie Starbuck, an Instagram page, and he's the one that's really on top of all this shit. He's the one that busted all this out. He's the one that found all that information about this, or was fed it, you know.
So it's like Target Tuckums 2.0 then.
I think it's a little beyond that even.
Oh, really?
Because this kind of hit home. Like, this was a dude in the community in Tennessee, and they're pushing the gender reassignment stuff, and they were putting up all the decorations just like Best Buy did 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But it hit too close to home, man. People were taking pictures.
Thinking your demographic, right? Like, your Target demographic and your Tractor Supply demographic are very, very different. Target doesn't have a tagline of "way out here."
Right.
Right. Like, Tractor Supply sells to farmers and rednecks. I doubt there's very many soccer moms and liberal white women from, like, Westchester cruising down a Tractor Supply.
Yeah.
There is the Instagram chicken
Pinterest
people.
Oh, yeah. Pinterest,
you know what I'm saying? Like, that's because if you go to a Tractor Supply, there's totally all this crap that you should not buy that looks really pretty for those things that doesn't actually work. There's the rest,
it's decorations. Fucking 30% of the store. The whole middle of the store is decorations. It's like metal chickens and shit. Metal.
And then you go to the outside and you're like, "I need this electric fence part." Yeah.
The shabby chic stuff.
I'm an Atwood shopper at this point. Atwoods is the greatest store ever made for men.
Man, if you're
gun store,
yep,
a hardware store, a feed store, and a Tractor Supply without the metal chicken ornaments all in one. I mean, you can go to Atwoods and buy your new flock and a gun to defend it and a pair of jeans and boots all at the same time.
Yeah, decorations are 90% profit. Absolutely. Guys, if you're listening to this and you're buying feed at Tractor Supply, you have pets. Like, Tractor Supply is the emergency, "Oh, we didn't replenish this on Sunday. I've got to feed these animals." You should not be buying any feed at Tractor Supply. I go to Tractor Supply out of convenience when I need a bolt on Sunday when the actual hardware store is closed and Lowe's is further away. I like going to Tractor Supply. I buy cattle panels at Tractor Supply because the panels they have are better than Co-op.
Okay.
But when you go buy feed, and especially if you can buy a pallet of feed where they fork it into your truck and then you use forks to unload it, Tractor Supply, they only give you 5% off on a pallet. It used to be 10% off, but everything costs less anywhere else.
And you can find better quality if you start sourcing in your state for feed that is, you know, responsibly grown.
Yeah, look at the mess they had last year with the chicken feed and everything going off eggs. And they chased that down to somebody in Purina, and Purina said, yes, we are aware. We've changed the formulation. We lowered the protein. That was that whole chicken. That was that Tractor Supply thing.
I'm trying to get actual numbers here so I don't lie. Okay, so a 50-pound bag of, like, Purina mass-produced CAFO-style chicken feed at Tractor Supply near me right now is $26, $25.99. We just picked up a truckload in bags. It wasn't like like a IBC or something on a trailer where they just dump it in. So we paid $11 a bag. No soy, no GMO. Not organic, no soy, no GMO, $11 a bag. And they did what John said, forklift, pallet, 20. I have a small truck, so 20 bags, that's, I could see the hood a lot better on the way home than on the way up. I need to get a trailer, but we're deciding what our next vehicle is going to be, so I'm waiting until we do.
We use a rabbit feed from the co-op. It's 18 a bag. I went to Tractor Supply to get some rabbit feed. The only feed they had there was 34 a bag, and there was no other spots for other rabbit feed. So I assume their rabbit feed is 34 a bag.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a ton. That's really a lot. It's a ton.
I've been feeding mine mulberry leaves every morning, except for
that. They like mulberries. They like clover.
Willow, everything.
Plantain is like rabbit crack.
Oh, they love that. You know, the other thing you can feed your rabbits that works with sheep, too, for deworming and all, chicory.
Oh.
Mm. And they don't eat a lot, like 2-3% of their diet. Like, I actually floated the idea. I did a show last week on small-scale homesteading, more like the urban backyard thing. And one of the things I said is, like, let's say you're more like me, and you, like, because I'm finding that I'm growing a lot more flowers in my garden to look at this year because I don't eat that many vegetables anymore. So, like, I floated the idea of, like, some people, why not a rabbit garden? Like, full-on raised beds, irrigated, everything, but, like, four by eight beds could probably feed 90% of your requirements because you could do a mix of, like I said, like chicory, plantain, and a lot of that's perennial. White clover, Beersing clover, like, you could really easily, and you're cutting this bed this week, this bed next week, this bed next week, this bed this week, you're already ready to go back. And at the same time, you could take surplus, go on YouTube, put in mini hay baler, and you'll find with about $40 worth of material how to build a mini hay baler. And then you can make hay bales during your growing season. Couple that with some fodder trees, like Nicole said, and a bagging lawnmower. And you have free rabbits forever. I mean, the only reason we don't have rabbits is friggin' Dorothy won't eat them.
You can,
if Dorothy would
eat
them, that would be my number one product on this place.
You can buy a pelletizer for $600 bucks. You can have them for $300 off. I think Vever even has a pelletizer.
So you want, if you do that, though, you really want a hammer mill and a pelletizer?
Yeah, hammer mill's
got hammer mill is what's going to chop all your shit up, and then your pelletizer will pelletize it for you. You know, that is a fucking business, by the way.
Yeah
hell yeah.
Like, you might want to step above the mid-grade Vivor if you're going to do it as a business and go to, like, I can't think of the company now. There's a company that emails me all the time trying to sell it to me because, like, I looked it up one time and gave them my fucking email. And I might do it someday, so I haven't unsubscribed. But they have, like, the hammer mill is, like, $1,200, and the pelletizer is, like, $2,000.
You can find them, too.
Super high-end, right?
And, well, like, and that's the argument for, like, a community set of tools for homesteaders. Where you, because it's not like you're going to use a pelletizer every day unless you're literally doing it as a business.
You can find them, too.
You could back a co-op into that to where the community is paying somebody to do the work, right, and buying the material at cost to them, which would basically be labor and absorbing the equipment, but also selling outbound, and then the co-op profits, and that's profit share to make. Like, and you could do that in a neighborhood if you did it right.
You can find them that run off of PTO also. And all these old farmers, when you're driving past and he's got 100 implements, if you go talk to those dudes, man, they would be just be tickled to sell that thing to you because it's just sitting there rusting a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, these guys hold on to this stuff because it's their whole life, you know, but their grandkids don't care anything about it.
I think Jack and I should do a show on what it's been like to implement the fodder tree system and grow sheep here from a work standpoint, having heard your Ferguson episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would be all you, like, I'll interview you on that because my fodder trees are, like, only fodder trees I have are mulberries. And I have, as bad as this place is, I am convinced that the mulberry is one of the most freaking badass trees on the planet. I have volunteer mulberries showing up fucking everywhere. And it's like, we had a lot of rain this spring, but now it sucks again. Like, it is dry as fuck out there. And they're not looking happy about it, but they're alive. And there's other, like, young trees. They're fucking dead. Like,
we put 100 white willow, Russian white mulberry, hybrid willow, and hybrid poplar. We put 300 trees on the top of the hill. We have mulberries all the way on the other side of the property growing in the swales right now. That's 9 acres away.
Well, I mean, the birds will spread it for you. That's what's happening.
Not a complaint at all. Like, I'd rather have those than something else. When I put the rabbits on grass in 2 cages, and then we move them every day. When I move them, I overspray with an automatic seeder, and it's got a deer forage. It's got white clover and red clover. And anytime that's in the shade, that stuff, I've got 12 inches of clover until it gets cold and kills it. I have clover where I can just mow 6 feet and fill up an entire bag on the lawnmower full of that clover.
We have box elders that, like, the ones with the helicopter seeds.
Yep,
you know what I'm talking about?
Everywhere.
Those come up everywhere. That's sheep crack and goat crack. And I haven't actually looked into the nutrition, like, if there's a toxin for rabbits yet, because we grow that like crazy here. And when we did the fodder tree system, knowing that the sheep and goats could eat it, I pollarded all my box elders. And that's what I do in the morning. It's like I harvest a big armful and throw it to the goats, and they're super happy.
That's the one with the spiky balls, right? Those spiky balls?
No, it's got helicopter seeds, so they fly down.
What's the sweet gum? Sweet gum. We give that to the rabbits.
Oh, okay. I've got some of that.
Yep.
But you don't necessarily have to pull all your trees out to do a fodder system if you have land with trees. Like, go see what you have. And Nick sells some really great plant packages that can get you started. Definitely implement that, but also tap into what you already have and figure out how you want to manage it.
Lacebark elm, good fodder. Hackberry, good fodder. Right? And those are very, like, lacebarks are real common now as ornamental because they're friggin' beautiful. And hackberries, that's another tree. Like, if I could go back 10 years and start over, I would plant mulberry, hackberry, locust, and one other thing that just went out of my brain right now. Oh, goji berry. Goji berry is the most honey badger fucking shit I've ever seen in my life, and rabbits eat that too.
I killed goji at my place.
Fuck.
I've never liked goji. I bought goji because Jack put it in, and I've got two that do well, but they just taste like a not good tomato to me.
They're not good fresh. You have to dry them.
Got it.
If you dry them, it concentrates the sugar, but honestly, what I use them for, I use them as a tonic. I'll eat like 2 or 3 in the morning when they're there, because I figure when they're there is when you should eat them. Don't eat a shitload of them because you will shit a load if you do. But the leaves, your rabbits will eat those.
Man, I do that with fig. I just ride past and I'll eat 100 figs. And I'm like, man, I got to stop eating these figs. Amanda wanted mimosa flowers.
Yeah.
And so we drove down 641 with a pole saw and filled an entire trailer full of mimosa branches in 10 minutes. You could just drive down any back road with a pole saw and fill up a trailer and have enough feed to feed your rabbits for 6 months if you ever had to.
Yeah.
Nobody said, hey, do you need help? Nobody said, hey, what are you doing?
No.
And I mean, we were just cutting. I was cutting branches. Once I had them on the ground, I had to cut them to be able to put them in the trailer. They were so big. Nobody blinked an eye, man. There is food and fodder sitting everywhere.
Yeah. And so they're not common here, but when we lived in Arkansas, they were like that. Like every friggin' place you drove by that was an open glade full of mimosa trees. And think about this, John. So you cut those branches. You feed them to your rabbits. Instead of stripping them, just feed them to your rabbits. So your rabbits will clean all the slash.
Yep.
And then you're left with either fuel wood or biochar wood or the makings of a hoogle mound.
Yep. And they call that the ecstasy plant. You take all those flowers and you fill your jar with them. And then you put moonshine or high-proof alcohol over it, and you build a tincture, and it replaces a lot of your medications that people take for mood stabilization.
I did not know that one.
Yep.
And now is the time to harvest them in Tennessee.
They are everywhere. And man,
I don't know why, but I know that people say this. They do say your sheep are not supposed to eat the flowers.
I try all that. People tell me so much shit that we've done, and I've never seen a negative to it. Especially like rabbits. We give rabbits everything, and they still produce huge litters. So we just test it.
The big thing is diversity of diet. So, like, Marjorie Wildcraft, when she found out that rabbits would eat Yaupon holly, and she had Yaupon holly everywhere, she got a shitload of Yaupon holly and fed them as much Yaupon holly as they wanted, and they all had heart attacks.
Oh, shit.
Because it's caffeine. The only native source of caffeine in North America. So she over-caffeinated her rabbits and killed them. So a lot of things, the poisons, the dose, comfrey's totally safe. But if you put pigs on a diet of like 30 to 35% comfrey, you'll kill them.
Mm.
But if you put them on a diet of like 20% comfrey, they'll grow faster and be healthier and have less illnesses. So a lot of things are like that. Like how, so just by being very varied in your diet, and like, I know you guys have all spent time outside. So have you ever seen like a deer, like run through the woods, stop, eat something and fall over and die? Animals have intrinsic intelligence and know how much of different things to eat. But when we put them in captivity, we have to be careful. Like, I killed a bunch of quail before I figured out what it was in my aviary. They were eating a certain type of wild nightshade, and it was a neurotoxin, and they were literally going insane and murdering themselves. And as soon as I figured it out and pulled it out, they stopped. But they only ate it after they ate everything else in there, and I was just feeding them other shit. And so when they only had that as a growing green, they started eating it and killing themselves. Until they got down to that was all there was, they didn't touch it.
I had a good one the other day. I was out feeding the quail, and we keep them in these little, like, Fisher-Price play school, you know, cubby holes. And one of the quail was dead. And when I pulled it out, that sucker had been eaten by a snake, and the snake regurgitated it. You know when the snake regurgitates and it's all slicked down the opposite direction? Yeah. So I don't know if he swallowed the whole thing. He must have regurgitated it to get back out of the cage. That thing had been fully to the feet, man. It had to be a big rat snake.
Yeah, I think I've got that problem right now. We have ducks, several different ducks still out, but several of the ones that were out are gone now. They've come back to the coop and their eggs are gone. They're not hurt. Nothing killed them, like happened to my Muscovies a couple of years ago. Their eggs are gone.
Yep, that's it. Yeah,
now, but their eggs are not gone like when a raccoon eats them and they eat a hole in it or some shit like that. They're completely gone. And what I'm figuring is I got a big rat snake crawling around finding these nests.
Yep.
And since the egg won't go away, that fucker will sit there all night long and gorge himself on every freaking egg. And let me tell you guys, if you want to grow the world record rat snake, feed them duck eggs.
Yeah.
Because I have pulled some snakes out of my shed that if somebody else told me they caught rat snakes that big, I would have said, you're a liar.
Yeah.
I have one. I have a picture. I've got it by the tail, and I'm just under 6 foot. I've got it by the tail. I've got a good 8-10 inches of tail coming down my arm. I'm holding it up as high as I can, and its head is on the ground.
Yep.
That is a massive Texas rat. They just don't get that big, but I guess they're like you know, some reptile keepers power feed. Here we go back to herpetology. Mm-hmm. And I think they're basically self-power feeding on these freaking eggs.
Yeah, they probably are. You hear possums all the time. We used to keep 55-gallon drums on their side for chickens to nest in.
Yeah.
And you'd go out there, and there'd be chickens and chicken nests, and there'd be a possum in asleep with them. Like, hadn't even ate the eggs. He's just asleep with the chickens.
They seem like the least problematic critter. I mean, people villainize them or whatever. I've never seen them hurt anything, really. Mm-mm. They eat – I've seen – like, I'll have food out for the cats, and the possum and the cat are eating out of the same bowl and shit.
There's many times on live at night where the dog's barking, and I'll go out there with the iPad and literally catch a possum.
Yeah.
Like a dozen times I've caught a possum on live feed. They're just out there with the cats, like you said, eating cat food.
Every dog I've ever had, when the possum does the play possum thing, they stop, except my boy Charlie that I just lost. Like, there were no possums here because when they would play dead, he's like, okay, bitch.
Yeah.
You want to do dead? I'll show you dead. But he wouldn't eat them, so I'd find these bloated, stinking possums laying all around the property.
That's true, our Kangal, our female, killed a couple possums last year.
She won't
eat them either. Nope. They know.
That's not good.
Yeah, we don't have possums because we have Sunny.
Yeah.
Sunny
will not abide by that.
When I used to trap, we would take everything we trapped and use the meat from it except possum.
Mm-hmm. They're super greasy.
Yeah, they're just not worth it. What's that?
Have you ever eaten possum?
I've tried it because I'll try anything once. I've eaten blackbird, right? Actually, blackbird was way better than possum. I'm talking about grackle. I wonder if I can find the video for that. That was way back at the beginning. It was a bet, like, from the audience back when I had, like, 10 people in the audience, like, that I wouldn't do it. I'm like, you don't know me.
I've skinned them out.
I'll wrap in fucking jalapeno stuff a grackle breast that I'm not going to die from it.
I've skinned them out and, you know, scraped them and salted them and stuff, but they're super, super oily.
Yeah. I don't even know why we did that. We used to get like $4 for a pelt.
Back we didn't get track. Shit. We were just crazy kids, man.
A good coon was like $25, and that was the 80s. So there was money in coons. There was money in muskrats. There was money in, like, a good red fox back then was like $150, like a prime red fox. And a good gray was like $75. You could actually do something with $75.
I was at an antique store this weekend, and they had a bunch of the wire frames for, you know, socking out and drying animals.
Okay, I've got some questions here. We'll start with, I need more info for options to have soy-free feed. The only place I can find anything locally in Michigan is from Tractor Supply, and we can't get peanut meal here. I have been tempted to ship pallets from Jack's supplier up here because the price is so good, and it is peanut meal instead of fish protein, which is what most soy-free feeds have, and you can taste that in the meat.
Yeah,
you can. Yeah. People will ship it. Like I'm buying super sacks of soil for raised bed gardens, and it's cheaper to buy a cubic yard 3x3x3. It's about 52 cubic foot bags. It's cheaper to buy the 50 and have it shipped than it is to buy the 50 bag sacks locally. So I would assume. Really,
go ahead.
I would assume foods, you know, animal feed's going to be the same.
I would say this person really needs to look beyond retail and look for feed mills and stuff, because that's what we go to. I mean, where we go, there's like giant silos and machines actually milling grain. And it's a 90-mile drive, but it's worth it. It's worth it to us to do it. Like, I buy enough that we go a quarter, so I have to go there 4 times a year. And if I don't have time, I go on next door and I pay some guy $100 to go do it for me.
And if you're worried about mice, you can put it in IBC totes. You could dump with a big funnel. You could dump, you know, your sacks into those IBC totes, and you can take your IBC totes and put them on elevation on cross cut. We cut rail ties in half to elevate them.
Yep.
And you know, when you open that, you're going to have to shake it, and there's going to be some doing to get it out, unless you have an auger system put in there to funnel it out. But you can keep rodents out of that stuff.
We just have two cats that sleep on top of the pile of feed.
Mm-hmm.
Find your farmers who are doing the Joel Salatin style chicken rotation.
Okay.
Find out what they augment with, because a lot of times they've gone beyond the feed store already too. And I know to find it here, I had to talk to other people, and then we discovered MPS Farm, and then I discovered Windy Acres, and I started finding more sources for the feed.
So you know how big my shop is, and I've got plenty of room to back in. So I actually talked to the place we get our feed about, like, can I get it for a buck less if I buy enough? And they're like, if you buy this much, you can get. So then I went out on next door, and we have tons of people keep chickens and stuff around here, and they all want non-GMO feed. And I'm like, well, I'll do it, and you can buy it for me, but I was going to pay 10 and sell for 16. That was the only thing. Like, anything less than that, it wasn't. They all bitched it was too expensive. Yep. Like, well, take your fucking ass to Tractor Supply and buy your garbage for $25 and leave me alone then. Yep. Like, there was a couple people willing to do it, but it wasn't enough to make it worth doing.
There's some really good groups on Facebook, and if you just get in those groups, like Backyard Chickens, and there's a couple Meat Birds, Backyard Meat Birds, or poultry, Pasture Raised Poultry, and you just tell, hey, I'm in this area, who has this feed, somebody will have what you need or have the information for you. I know there's a ton of dudes who are like, I don't use Facebook, man. You are missing out on so much information by not being. Just make a fake account, get in there, ask your question.
You're being personally called out, Jack.
Nah, I don't give a fuck.
No, I'm not calling Jack out. But the deal is, Craigslist is dead. If you want to buy shit, man, Marketplace is where. That's the only place. That's the place.
Well, when I left, people said, like, you know, I want to do what you did, but I make money on Marketplace. I'm like, fuck it, keep doing it. I don't do it because I did it. I'm just, when they threatened to delete my group of 20,000 people, which was a private invitation only group, because somebody posted something about COVIDs, I was fucking done. I'm like, no, I'm not putting one more ounce of effort into building anything on this fucking platform that can be taken away from me that easily. Because again, that was the big thing. It was an invitation only private group. So shut the fuck up. Yeah, you don't have to look at it if you don't want to.
Yeah, here's a question. Is it normal to call feed mills and have them be offended that you don't want soy? Absolutely.
Yep.
I get a lot of people trying to explain to me why soy is not the problem that I think it is, and that I'm wrong, and that they don't want to deal with, most of the ones who are complaining about that don't want to deal with the fish protein because that smells.
Yeah.
It's not fun to work with. That's why MPS Farms stopped doing soy-free. So now I got to go into Kentucky to coffee if I want a soy-free feed. That's what I found at this point. Or, you know, ship a pallet from Jack, which has peanut protein, which will be better.
Yep. Yeah.
So, just, you know, listen to what they have to say, smile and nod, and move on to the next one. And I would say this, like, even if there is soy in it, if they've got the GMO free part, you can start there, and that's probably better than what you're getting at Tractor Supply. And usually the price is going to be a much better price too. So, you know, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good on that one.
My response would be, so my customers pay $12 a dozen for eggs because I am soy free. So I don't care what you have to say. Can you do this or not? Right. And because that's my, you know, that's my reasoning. Like, that's what I market. That's what sells. We're up to a dollar an egg now. Right. Who the hell gets a dollar an egg? Well, we do, because you can't get it in quantity anywhere else. That's why. Right. And so I'm paying half as much as you are for feed, and I'm getting three times as much as these people are for eggs, because you take that extra step, you know. And we don't make a ton of money off it because we don't have that big a flock anymore. But, you know, we could scale back up to where we were easily if we wanted to.
But you don't want to. Okay, next question is, can you feed rabbits from aquaponics-grown lettuce?
Can people eat aquaponics-grown lettuce?
There's no nutritional value in any of those greens that you're going to grow. You'd be better off. I mean, I feed them water hyacinth, but there's not a huge nutritional value there. There's volume, and if you feed it to them straight out of the tanks, they're getting a lot of, you know, water out of that. If you took 100 pounds of water hyacinth and set it out on your lawn for 2 days, that 100 pounds is going to become, you know, 10 pounds. What's the nutritional value there? You'd be better off doing a fodder like Jack used to do with barley. I use black oil sunflower. And it is said that on dry pelletized feed, your animal can absorb 18% of the nutrient value. But on a fodder, they can absorb 78% of the nutritional value. I don't know where I have that number in my head. I don't know where that comes from.
It sounds like a Ferguson thing.
It sounds like Ferguson talked about fodder.
You know, I think it probably was. It probably was. And that's with sprouts, which is just a, you know, fodder for animals is just a fancy word for, you know, sprouts when you're doing sprouted seed. You can also, when you guys that are planting crops and stuff, if you went and bought carrot seed or broccoli seed, when you buy the packet, there's a couple hundred, you know, seeds in there. When you buy it for sprouting, you buy it by the pound, and there's thousands and thousands of seeds in there.
Yeah. So while we're on rabbits, I was helping someone with dog food cans and was thinking this is really convenient. Then I thought of John, and all he does is split the rabbit. I just throw the whole rabbit out.
Yeah, I do the whole rabbit. Too. Yeah, we give them the whole. Same with chickens. If I have old chickens, we just kill that chicken, and we give the whole entire thing to the dog. Now, if we give a dog a big rabbit or chicken, we don't feed it for a couple of days. We feed every 2 or 3 days. We don't feed every day. If you have a dog that will not take whole animal like that, take a pair of scissors and just cut the belly and let part of the guts, and it'll eat it right away. My dogs take rabbits, and the first thing they do is eat the guts out of them, and then they rip the rabbit in half somehow. They're walking around with two pieces of rabbit in their mouth.
And they will do it for days. So if you're going to feed your dogs this way, you need to live somewhere where you're okay with the dog wandering around with its carcass, letting it go bad so it gets some of the bacteria from
this
that.
This is not an apartment dweller thing. You will come home and have blood just wiped up the side of your refrigerator and everywhere.
I just saw this little chihuahua in an apartment, like, gnawing on, like, a rabbit ass. And, like, Susie Homemaker coming home and going, oh, my God.
Yeah, I had come into my shop in the old shop in Oceanside. My very back room was a reptile room. And I came in the back there, and there was blood all up the wall. And what had happened was my guy had gone out to one of the lagoons and caught a big stork or something and tried to feed it to the snake. And the snake got it, killed this thing, or I guess he killed it. But it smeared this bird all up. So it looked like a murder scene when I walked in the room back there.
Things you need to know before you go raw. Other people cook the food and portion it out in pressure cookers. That's how they do it.
That's
in more of a city dwelling situation.
That's what we do.
But it's a lot easier just to take the rabbit and go.
We don't have rabbits. We're doing chicken and we're doing bought chicken, and it's really not a big deal to do it the way we do it. And we also have two dogs that eat a lot, and so there's still an expense there. So we are mixing in some rice and sweet potato with it. So it works out really well. And now that we're down to two dogs, it's much easier. Like Charlie ate as much as those two put together.
We give all of our scraps, every bit of scrap that comes out of the chicken, and we have a commercial kitchen in here.
Yeah.
All of our stuff, the leftovers, we feed everybody lunch, all the leftovers, that gets dumped to the chickens. All of our grease, drippings, any of that stuff, we take that bowl and we'll put it over a little bit of dog kibble. Any eggs, any dirty eggs, we don't even clean off eggs. If we have dirty eggs, dented, cracked, those all go to the dogs.
Same.
Everything goes back out to the farm.
We're doing like the eggs that are not suitable for people or just aren't worth cleaning. They're like dog treats. We just throw them the whole egg, and they, you know, a lot of times we put Belle out, we give her a couple eggs.
And if you have farm dogs and you find that they won't eat, that's because the chickens are laying eggs in other places you're not aware of, and those dogs are eating all they want.
It's not the only possibility.
Mm-hmm.
We put Lucy on a diet, and her ass only got so much skinnier, and we figured out she was eating duck food.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The food we're using, since it's no soy, it's made with sorghum and peanut meal is the primary ingredients. Peanut butter, and dogs like peanut butter.
my dogs love corn for some reason. If they if they can get anywhere where there's corn or scratch.
You mean like hard corn, like feed corn?
Yeah. Yes.
Really?
Yes, whole or in a grain. They love scratch, man. If I have to fence, I have to have the gates closed because they want to eat that corn, man.
That's weird as shit.
Yeah, all of them. Every dog I have wants to eat corn.
That is freaking bizarre to me. Like,
dogs will eat what they eat. What happens here is we have a dead deer. They won't be eating their dinner, and about 3 days later, there'll be a big dead deer leg in my yard.
Yeah.
They drag it up.
Yeah, they're like, we're just going to eat it here. It's too far away out there.
Yeah, on the side of the road, there's a deer missing a leg.
Yeah. And then the veterinarian's like, so we had worms in the dogs. And they're like, well, your flea medication's not working. No, they're eating carcasses.
Yeah.
Really? I'm like, I do live in the country. Like, I can't. Yeah. They're eating mice. They're eating carcasses. They're whatever. They're probably eating other animals' poop. Like, all of the things dogs eat. Is what they eat.
We anamorphize them, but really the nastier it is, the faster they are to eat it. I remember I had a Brittany Spaniel, and we ended up doing the peroxide thing to make him regurgitate because he ate, I don't remember what it was, something got massacred on the road, and it had been there like a week, and nobody had picked it up, and he got away, and he ate it. And I mean, it was like crawling with maggots. He ate the maggots. He ate everything. It was like, we called the vet, and the vet's like, it would probably be better that he didn't keep that down. So he told us to give him basically a shot glass full of peroxide, and they immediately, like, it's like giving a person Epicac. Like, it came up, and I won't gross anybody out, but everything was still there. I'll just leave it that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They also, the first thing they do when they find some rotted, nasty shit is roll all over
it.
If you see some dark stuff on your dog, do not pet that. Yeah. You will not get that off of your hand for days.
Yeah.
You know why they do that?
Why? To mark it?
To put the scent on themselves so they can find it.
Ah.
They take, like, that's why they roll in anything. And sometimes it's not something disgusting. Sometimes it's like fresh cut grass. I like this place, and I might, and since dog brain, you know, it's all over the place, I want to find this place again. They can then, for a certain amount of time, smell that on themselves and track back to where it was. I learned that from Joel.
Oh, that's really interesting. I thought it was to disguise their smell.
No, it's so they can find it.
But that makes way more sense.
Yeah. Like, that was one of those things, like, when he explained it to me, I'm like, well, fuck, why didn't I? Like, that's one of those moments where you're like, why didn't I think of that? Like, that's obvious when you think about it.
Yes, you can put your eggs into a compost bin if it's hot. Joel Salatin puts an entire cow carcass in the compost. They put all the pigs, rot it up. I take all the pig after it's butchered out. We put the pig out, and the chickens pick it dry. On about day three, there's maggots all over. The chickens eat all of that. Once the chickens are done and there's that mummy left in there, the dogs get a hold of it, and then they strip it off. And within about a week, you have perfect bone that looks like it's like the pig's skulls. The dogs just pull the mummified skin off of that, and it looks like you have bleached it, but you haven't. The sun just bleached it out.
Yeah, Jeff Lawton would say if it was alive or can be alive,
it can
go in the compost. So
yep,
Let's stay on the dog raw thing. Are you all feeding, from Bonnie Blue, also Bonnie, thank you for the coffee tip. Are you all feeding 100% raw, or do you mix with kibble? And how do you handle that when traveling with a dog?
I don't travel with dogs. My dogs are here. They're not pets. They are here for a purpose. And yes, many times I feed raw. If I am in a hurry and do not have time to dispatch a rabbit or pull litters or something, or I haven't defrosted, then I give them kibble, and typically it's eggs or it's fat. If we have a bunch of fat in the kitchen from, you know, cooking down hamburger, for instance, then I will specifically that day divide up the bowls, four little bowls with very little kibble, and then fat over the top of those.
Our animals do both, and I do that to keep a nutritional balance a bit, but the only animal here that's not getting supplemental food are the sheep. They just eat what we grow.
I give the sheep one pitcher of sheep feed every day into two bowls, and they throw most of it on the ground. But I do that specifically because anytime I shake that thing, I can get those sheep to follow me any place into any pen that I need them in.
Yeah, so I was going to say, we do sheep treats too, because otherwise you have nothing. But they just eat grass.
So the feed thing, that makes me think of my grandmother. We had like a half dozen chickens when I was a kid at my grandmother's place. And they only fed those chickens enough feed, which was always scratch, to condition that response.
Yep.
So that we could make the chickens come and go where we wanted the chickens to come and go. Otherwise, they had to forage and they got slop. Like, my grandma did not do what I do, which is like you take all the scraps and just throw it out there for the chickens. She had a coal stove that was always on. It was either the one in the kitchen in the wintertime or the one out in the shanty in the summertime. And it was always on to cook something. And she had like a big friggin' steel bucket. And like, she would just throw all the scraps in there with water and set it on the coal stove with like a low simmer until it turned into like a slop. And she fed the chickens that. And they ate it immediately. Like, when I throw shit out for them to eat, it goes days before they really, like, if it's a cucumber, like the rotted cucumber, they eat the seeds out of it. But most of the stuff I throw out there for them, it's as it starts to decompose, that's when they start to eat it and the things that come in. But
yeah, they want the microbes and the bugs that are on
it. Yeah. The Depression era, you know, grandparents I had, they saw that as, okay, if we do this, they'll eat it, and that guarantees us an egg flow.
Yep.
But they probably bought for that flock, I bet every 2 months, one bag of scratch, which back then was like $4.
We had, through the winter last year, when everybody was talking about all their chickens going off feed because of the Tractor Supply feed, I had four runs of chickens, and I fed one run black oil sunflower seed. I fed one layer pellet. I fed one scratch, and I fed the other one all three. And we didn't have a noticeable amount of egg difference between the three. We had a little more eggs than the guys that we fed everything to.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between the high protein layer pellet and just the whole corn or just the scratch, it wasn't noticeable from day to day. And all they got for, I mean, we did this. I did this for probably 90 days. Those
just
chickens,
just
to see. And we did not see any noticeable difference in the egg production in those. I was doing scratch. My buddy Jason does a bunch of moonshine, and he was saying, he said, why don't you just feed them whole corn because it's so much cheaper? They have a gizzard that'll grind the corn up. They're not just going to pass it through. And I said, what? I'm going to try that. And it worked, man. You don't see whole kernels of corn laying after the chickens eat it. They do grind it up, and you save a lot of time grinding that if you're running a processor.
You can ferment that whole corn too.
You can ferment
all
of it.
They love that. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, they love it sprouted too. And I haven't done it in a while, but I used to do the black oil sunflower that way. Mm-hmm. Just a little bucket with holes drilled in it. I had a system. It was four buckets with holes and one bucket without holes.
Yep.
And you take the first bucket with holes, you put it in the other bucket, you fill it up with water and as much sunflower as you want to sprout for that round. The next day you pull it out, let it drain. You put the next bucket in. Eventually you get to the point where you're harvesting the fourth bucket and priming the first bucket. And it won't go to fodder fully. What it does is it goes to like a sprout where it's still encased, and they freaking destroy that. And it's actually healthier for them at that point. And it's probably semi-fermented because it's sitting outside and wet.
Yeah, we did that for years, Jack, off of your system. You made a lot of videos about that.
Yeah.
We did that with a six bucket system. with barley. We did wheat. We did several different things with that. And that works. That works very well.
Yeah, and four buckets is summertime. So yep. As you get into cooler weather, you just keep adding buckets until you get the level of growth you want. I did it with barley too, but the better ROI was the sunflower. Like you got mm-hmm. more additional growth or more additional weight out of it. And then if you look at the fat content of sprouted sunflower is something like 18%.
Yeah,
so you're feeding a high fat diet. And then the other thing is, so David, our mutual friend David, checked into this. He's like, don't worry about shit when you're buying some black oil sunflower. They don't spray it because there's no benefit to spraying it. There's no need to spray it. So if you're paying for organic sunflower, you're literally buying like a cover crop that's grown in between other organic cash crops because no one sprays them anyway.
So I was using in the tractor, which I move every day, we were putting a bunch of black oil and the chickens missed a bunch. I have hundreds of black oil sunflower plants right now. I also have corn growing up amongst them where they just missed whole kernel corn.
Yeah.
And I actually went in and planted, I think it's about 60 feet by 30 feet of black oil sunflower right now that's about this tall. So in the next couple months, it'll be up also all the way.
And you can just feed them ahead of that.
Yeah, the birds are starting to come down and getting those wild ones that just sprouted on their own. They're already starting to eat it. As soon as that thing slouches and it kind of kinks, that's when you want to pull that. If you don't, then the wild birds will grab it up pretty quick.
You know, I bet you the reason that those do so well, because that happens here too, is the birds' activity combined with that being
acid.
Right. They might pass some of it, but I think it's just so I interviewed a dude that built a thing called the Cluster Cluck about a month and a half ago. I think his name's Smith is his last name, Zach Smith or something like that. Yeah, Zach Smith. And he had this really interesting picture he posted. So the Cluster Cluck is an autonomous chicken tractor. Mm-hmm. You put your birds in it and then it every day it moves itself or it can move itself twice a day. And he has bigger ones where he does like multi-species, like he's got pigs and chickens together, one on each side. But he took the chicken one that's more for like people like us, like homesteaders, and he ran it down his lawn out just front of his house, not on his farm. And then it has this grid-like pattern where the birds can't actually get to the ground for little places underneath where when they're there. And he puts this picture up early in the season, and the whole strip where he ran the cluck is green. Okay? And you would think, well, that's disturbance, it's nutrient, whatever. And everything else is still brown. It hasn't, you know, turned green yet. But you could see the grid patterns. Mm. So the only place it greened up was where the beaks went into the ground. And he said he thinks it has probably some level to do with like microbes.
Mm.
And that's accelerating the growth. So I think when those birds are pecking and all, and that leftover seed, because it comes up everywhere, but the places they're active, it goes freaking apeshit when it comes up.
You can see on my on the compound video series, I do a lot of drone stuff, and you can see 30, 60, 90 days where we've run the rabbit tractors and the chicken tractors. And when I just moved it, you'll see it's just brown and it's just scalped almost. And then the next day and the next day, and it's like it's going from 1 volt to 20 volts to 100 volts to 2,000 volts. And the green, man, it's so much more. And like you'll be surprised when you see the property in October here, how much grass and how thick the growth is just from running the animals and then feeding them other stuff and overlaying. And then they're just super seeding, especially running the sheep. There's so much grass in the back, whereas if we mowed the grass in the back at 5 inches, there's actually very little grass. But there's now grass everywhere. There's tons of it.
I didn't know you were tractoring rabbits. Are you only tractoring like your bunny grow outs, or are you? Because I know you have the hutches and all.
Yeah, the bunny grow outs. But I mean, at any time we have like 60 of them. Like right now, I've probably got 100 bunnies, probably more right now.
Do you ever eat rabbit, or are you only feeding them to your dog?
We will eat rabbit. We just don't have to. The truth is that I'm just super lazy, and I've got a dude that shops every day and cooks steak for us every day.
Okay.
I've probably got 2 cows in the freezers right now. We don't ever defrost anything.
Do you run your rabbit tractors with cross grids so they can't get out, or is it straight on the ground?
Oh, no, there's wire on the ground. There's wire. We use two by four wire on the ground.
Okay.
That way they can, because we were using something smaller. We were using like the same rabbit cage, you know, like the 1x2. They can't get enough grass because they're pretty heavy. So we don't really lift them. We kind of drag them, and I don't want it to push the grass down. So by using the 2x4 wire, it keeps the rabbits from being able to get out, but it lets that grass come up in there fully. Now, if they're scalping your grass or they're just decimating it too much, the answer is just move it twice a day.
Correct.
Yeah, Tactical made one where they hang, so they're the grass, they hang like just a little bit off the ground, and the problem is it's too much, too close together, and it's not coming up, and I have a lot of plantain, so I'm thinking if we can replace it with 2x4 or something like that, that'd be great. It's like alternatively straight on the ground, but then they can dig out if you don't have something to stop them from digging out.
Yeah, 2x4s work well for us. We're putting rabbits on the ground at about 10 weeks. So, you know, they've been with mom on breast milk. So those rabbits, they're just chubby. They're not getting out of that 2x4.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any recommendations for where to buy sprouting feed, rye seed for sprouting feed?
Oh, you at the co-op. I would just get with your co-op. You can definitely buy it through Amazon has it. You'd be amazed at what you can, like all that, that sun hemp. And those field peas that we put in with the inoculant and everything and the swales on the install, those all came off Amazon.
Yeah. Although now you have new peas with an inoculant that I understand was dropped off last week.
Yes. I believe Sky picked those up. They were actually dropped off that night at the gas station.
Okay.
So they're actually here. He has them. They're in the shed right out here.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I saw that and... Now you can throw those all over the place. The other thing about sprouting rye is, again, if you find your local feed mill and they're growing it, they may have some for sale. So in addition to all the places you can order things, you may have a local source. You just have to start asking a lot more questions to find the local
co-ops,
source.
Co-ops can bring stuff in. Like I needed rodent feed, and I specifically wanted to use Harlan Laboratories. They hold the patent on all your white lab mice. They all come from the same place. And my co-op was willing to bring that in a pallet at a time and warehouse it and just sell it to me, you know, 4 bags a week. So, I mean, they were super cool about it. I didn't even have to pay for it up front.
Yeah, but our co-op does Timothy hay, and they source it from a local farmer that you can find out who it is and talk to him.
Yeah, if you go in and smile and talk to the guy that makes the decisions at the co-op wants you to be pleased in your area. They really do.
Yeah.
Like our co-op's good. And like our co-op locally is much smaller than the one the town over. The one the town over has a full motor shop. They carry everything from steel, everything from Husqvarna. They carry 10 different lines of mowers. They carry sawmills. I mean, you saw, like, we did a chainsaw workshop here, and they brought in 20 saws out here. They brought in all their dudes. They had all the saws to look at. They brought in all the equipment. They were really good.
Oops, not that one. This one. Is there a good way to keep rabbits cool in the summer? Our heat index has been 100. Yeah, that's what I use.
Yeah, shade. There's a rabbit called a Tanook or Tamook from Texas A&M, which is more of a heat hardy rabbit. I just run New Zealand's. I mean, we get 100, 105. The real answer is just overhead shade or trees. We have them in a structure. I'm putting up shade cloth on the sides here in the next couple days. And you can run fans, even if you have no electricity, you can run a fan just off of a solar panel.
Yeah.
Super easy. And you could add a battery to run it through the night if you had it. Very cheap now.
Very cheap. Very cheap. Because all you need, and the daytime, like direct drive ones, they're going to run when it's most necessary.
Yep.
The other thing we did, we haven't really done rabbits here, but we've done like chickens and tractors and all. And during the heat of summer, if we have birds that are being tractored, we keep like 1 gallon jugs frozen in the deep freezer. Mm-hmm. And about midday, we'll throw a jug in every tractor. And the birds will literally like back up and literally stick their ass on the jug. So as soon as we saw that, we're like, so rinse the jugs before they go back in the freezer. But like you could basically have a set of jugs in like every evening when you check on your birds, put them in the freezer, and by midday the next day they're frozen. You can do that with rabbits.
I see so many people doing all kinds of stuff for their rabbits. I'm of the belief stun, sheer total utter neglect.
Yeah.
And I think that generationally you will breed stronger animals.
Agreed.
Like like I breed my rabbits all year long. Like you'll hear, oh, they turn off because the male sperm production drops. Granted, there are definitely hotter places than we are, but there are many days, like months worth, where we're 100, 105.
Yeah.
Like, and then the real feel is like 125. And my rabbits produce all year long. Like we have litters in the middle of winter. We have litters in the middle of summer.
I'm all for letting them struggle, except for the extremes. So when you get to that extreme event, then I would want to try to help them out. Like,
yeah,
I remember when I was up there for the spring, one of your SRFs, and you guys were like, it's not normally like this. And we went to Nicole's house and the sheep were panting like dogs.
Like, I think nobody died.
But that was the event where like a shitload of cattle and all died in Kansas. Like mm-hmm. that was an extreme, unusual event. I think day to day, I think John's right. Friggin' Mark Shepherd's stun method. It works on trees, works on animals too.
Well, we kind of do a hybrid of that here, where if a sheep has had illnesses, it just doesn't get to reproduce. Or I have some right now that don't get to reproduce, in air quotes. Yes, yeah. They do. And what they have is meat, male or female.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, good mother raises them, but had some issues, and I don't want to pass those issues on.
So you're saying you'll let them lamb, but that lamb is not.
Yeah, and if you're a male and you had a problem, like.
Yeah, especially a male. Yeah, Greg Judy, man. If he says if a sheep jumps out once, he's shooting that sheep.
30-06, bro.
Yep, that he says that too. 30-06.
He said a 30-06 is 100% effective.
That should be a shirt. 30-06, bro.
I think 30-06 is 100% effective. That's
okay.
And it works on everything. Works on pedophiles, sheep. You know,
that should be one of your rules of life.
John, I don't know why you haven't done a wood chipper shirt yet.
Because Bear did it. We were gonna Bear and I. We think a lot alike.
All right.
And if I see somebody do it, I'll just wait and we'll do it a year later.
Like the Pedoizer 5000 or something.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It says pedophile. I mean, you see William Bond wear the hat all the time.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I got you. That was the reason, like, everybody wanted me to do Resistance is Fertile back in the day. I'm like, I'm not ripping off the Nervais.
That's a good one.
I don't like them, I'm not taking somebody else's thing they literally created.
Well, I mean, you could go ahead and take it and go ahead and patent it and trademark it now. So
yeah, douches.
Shout out to Chris Watkins. When I said chainsaw, Chris was the man that was there teaching everything. Tons of knowledge and very entertaining.
Not a surprise. Is there a wrong time to coppice mulberries? I'd like to get mine down to shrub height.
Yeah, now?
Yeah.
Right
there,
now?
I mean, if it's super hot and it's not getting water, might not be the best time.
Pedo pulper.
That's the best ever. The pedo pulper. Okay, Nicole, what'd you say? Because that distracted me, and I'm
coppicing. So coppicing in the middle of summer is not the best timing, but it kind of depends on your plant. But if you're coppicing it for the first time, I did mine in the middle of winter when they were dormant. After talking to Nick, that's not the only way to do it, but I did that to set them up for as much success as possible.
And how low you cut them?
First time strategy. Because you got to do it while they have growth for it to be fodder.
Yeah.
But peak of heat is probably not a good time.
Yeah, and when you're coppicing or pollard, I actually pollard and don't coppice, but when you're doing that first cut for the first time with a tree that's, you know, 8 inches around, or whether it depends on what you're doing, when it's dormant, all of its nutrients are basically in its roots right now, and they're going to come back, and then you're going to get that shrub or that bush, and then that's when you're harvesting here. Like, I'm harvesting right now in the heat of summer, but I'm also leaving some on to photosynthesize.
Well, every time you do that, you get more and more of the plant stem cells, basically, to make that kind of weird-looking thing that happens. And that's where you get that massive amount of bushy material growing out of.
And what we're talking about here is taking a fodder tree and cutting off the growth.
Yeah.
At the ground level is called coppicing.
Yeah.
And then it will start putting new growth out, and you can keep doing that for a long time. Pollarding is cutting higher up, which is what I do because I'm running sheep through it, and I want it above sheep level when they're grazing nearby. Plus, the way my land is, it's like coppicing's cool because you can just mow it.
Yeah.
And then it comes back. But pollarding works better for my landscape. And
And I like clogging because I do it about just below my shoulder height, right? So when I go out there with a saw, it's just like that. And I do mostly black locust that way, and I do it for fuel wood. And I do it small, like, you know, thumb to wrist size, because we're talking about like stove, wood stove cooking fuel wood. I don't really burn wood to heat the house because it's not cold enough to heat the house very often.
And fodder just means that we're feeding it to the animals. Any tree can be done in these manners.
Yeah.
I look at it as like you're taking a tree and you're cutting it low so that it puts out a ton of growth, because I want it more like a blueberry bush than a tree. And then if you get all that new growth and you're cutting frequently as it's growing, you can cut it in a manner now with a hedge trimmer instead of physically having to cut it. Because we're going to take that, and if you cut that thin green growth wood and that green growth off of there, and you run it through a small, at that point, you can run it through a cheapy wood chipper, and you can take that and make silage out of it now, because you can use the pulp and the leaves at that point.
You can do that. You can also do what Nicole's doing, so that you don't do any work except dropping. So you pollard higher than they can browse. Yep. And when you're moving them through, you drop the limbs and just leave them there. They do all the work for you, and they leave your frame, and then all you have is something that's basically a fuel wood or biochar, wood chipper, mulch, whatever. But, you know, Nick and I talked about this. Like, if I'm out working with somebody else with a chainsaw and the trees are dropped already and we have two jobs to do, slash and buck, I want the job of bucking. Cutting slash sucks. It's a pain in the ass. It's annoying. So let the animals do the bulk of the slashing for you.
Somebody said,
if you have sheep or something that will do it. Like, you're not going to do that with rabbits, I don't think.
Somebody said pedo pulper. I hope it's not trademarked. It doesn't matter if it's trademarked anyways. It's words allowed versus able. I'm gonna run 1,000 shirts. By the time somebody sends me a cease and desist, it's already happened. I will be very joyful when I get a cease and desist from Oprah Winfrey one day.
You know, if Brian Black has gotten away the shit he's pulled with Star Wars parody patches and shit like
us,
that.
Yeah, us too.
Like, it's not happening. It's just not a thing anymore.
We got a cease and desist from Playboy almost immediately. Like within a couple minutes of the email going out, and we got a cease and desist from Super Bowl. Other than that, man, we've never gotten cease and desist on anything.
NFL is serious about their shit, man.
And we'd already done it. They're like, we want to know how many of them, and I'm like, piss off. It's already gone. Like,
my son got a cease and desist from the NFL, and it was over a thing on a form. He wasn't even selling it. It was back when people still used iPods, and he hacked a way that you could basically like put NFL logos on your iPod.
Yeah.
And he put it on this forum that was from Sports Illustrated or something like that. And they like basically sent him this letter that said he has to stop doing it. It's like, I'm not actually doing anything. There's nothing for me to stop. Like, I don't know what you want from me. NFL is dead ass serious.
Yeah, if you ever get a cease and desist like that, just pull it from the website. That's the end of it. You don't even need to reply to it. And yeah, Tom, I'm not worried about your comment. I'm just saying that for anybody else listening.
And I will also say, if you ever get an email from Getty Images that says you owe them money for use of a copyrighted image, just fucking throw it away. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, people limit themselves so much out of just things people have said. I mean, we just repeat things so often. Just do it, man.
I got a letter from Getty one time. They said I owed them like $10,000 or something. I just didn't do anything.
Yeah. I'll pull up an image off my site if for some reason I've messed up, but I usually buy mine when it's a stock image. Question about apocalyptic manufacturing. That's a fun one to say. I can build all kinds of things as long as I get bolts and metal. I don't want to be making bolts. How does supply bolts when China goes away?
Well, you better know. So bolts are super cheap. You can buy Fastenal. You can buy a whole wall of Fastenal bins. They'll almost give them to you at this point and just fill them with the things you need. You can also go to Fastenal and they will bring you the whole wall of bins, and they'll come in and actually look at your operation. Say you run John Deere tractors and you're a farming operation. They will put all those common bolts in there. And then there's a barcode. Like, they'll bring it in. Whether you use them or not, you're going to pay a one-time fee. My friends have all their farm trucks outfitted by Fastenal, and all their bins And then they have a scan system that'll do it. You can buy all that shit. You could go to Harbor Freight and just buy cheapies, even super cheap. But I remember my grandfather made bolts when my dad grew up in Beaumont, Texas on a farm. And when they didn't have something, you weren't going to the hardware store to get that shit. They literally made bolts. They made nuts. And there's tons of content, really, really good content. You should watch that now, so you kind of have it in your head as to how that works. And it's all doable. It is not difficult to do. We just are lazy and don't want to do it. I don't want to make sewing machine needles, but I bet your ass if I needed to, we could build sewing machine needles.
Figure it out. So everything John said, and then reinforcing that, they're bolts. They're not granola bars. As long as they don't get wet and rust, they last forever. And then another hack is get yourself like a shitload of different sizes of all thread. And just keep that on stock, because if you need a bolt of length, you can always sub in all thread without actually making a bolt. All you do is cut the all thread, just put a fucking nut on it first so you can take it back off, because you're going to booger up the end.
My man Josh Winnie right there said a lathe. Guys, there are lathes and end mills and multi-machines sitting out in the weather that people will give you for free. As all of the automation comes in, there's a recycling place about 20 minutes from here that there's 80 Bridgeport mills just sitting out there on the driveway. I promise you they would give it to you or sell it to you at the cost of the metal. And if you know how to run that shit, man, to have a multi-machine like that just sitting in the corner on a building, you can build anything.
I think the bigger question is, what's the scale of the problem if China stops sending us bolts?
Well, we're going to start building them.
We will start building them. Things will cost more because it costs more to build our own bolts. Other countries who want to sell something to people will start making them. And so the question is, how long does the shortage go on, really? And it kind of depends on where we are economically, and where the world is economically. But at the end of the day, I think it's helpful to have some on hand. But if you're planning to endure for 10 years with nobody ever making a bolt again, I don't think that's realistic. If we're in a situation where people need bolts, people will pull bolts off things they don't use anymore.
There's a lot of bolts out there.
Yeah.
And right now, for anybody who's hearing this conversation and doesn't really know what direction to go, man, Makerspace. Look up Makerspace. There is a grizzled old dude at a Makerspace that would love nothing more than to teach a young dude how to make a bolt. We used to have automotive shop and fab shops on military bases where you would go work on your stuff, and you'd go in there to work on your car, and they had all the tools, and there was always an old dude in there that knew the answer to everything, how to make stuff. And like, you've got these tool shops now, people are setting up these tiny houses and stuff. And they have checkouts. You go in there and you rent the weed eater, or you rent the string trimmer, or you rent this thing. And it's all automated now with a barcode. You buy a membership so you can go in there and check your tools out. Like, Glenn, man, when you and Curie move here to Tennessee, you should totally set that up. We can go get those end mills the next time you're out here. I'll take you over there and we'll look at them.
Okay. I have been amending my clay with pine chips and manure. Can I plant potatoes in my giant mound of leftover amended soil? Jack, take this one.
I don't know.
I'm
not a potato guy.
What would you do if you were looking at that and looking at potatoes?
I would say yes. I would say to anybody that's thinking about growing potato as a calorie crop, to think a great deal about subbing in sweet potato in most of the country. Sweet potato doesn't get blight. The greens are edible. If you don't eat the greens and you have livestock, they're another source of fodder. They're not huge, but they're something like 11% protein. So they're a decent fodder item. Potato itself, I have had miserable results with potato here in Texas. Like, it's like ringing the doorbell for blight here. So it's not my strong suit, John.
All of your animals will eat the sweet potato greens. They grow like a vine. You can take the vine, put it in a cup of water, and carry it through the winter when it all dies out. I have watched, 1,000 videos. Like, no bullshit. I've watched 1,000 videos on growing potatoes. And if you're not growing them in a farming method, the general consensus is you can grow potatoes almost anywhere, whether you mound them, or you do them in buckets, or you dig a trench and put them in the trench and cover them, or just simply put them on the ground. I just put a shitload of potatoes, like hundreds of them, on the ground, put some old soil over them, and then just took old straw bales and flaked the straw bales out. We'll see how they do. I'll let you know in, I don't know, in 60
I'll bet
days.
The aspirin trick works with the potatoes, Jack.
It might. Like I said, I don't eat a lot of potato. The Japanese purple skinned sweet potatoes, they are easier to grow. Like John said, you can propagate the shit out of them. I mean, once you get one going, you just take cuttings and stick them. And if you do want to feed them to livestock, if you do aquaponics, I'll just say expect to have to rip the ebb and flow bed apart at the end of the season because there will be a billion hair roots. But I did it 1 year, and I was using a 21-gallon concrete tub as an ebb and flow bed. I fed my ducks a wheelbarrow full of greens once a week for 14 straight weeks from one little bed that's a couple foot by a couple foot. And so they're incredibly productive. They're great carb. To me, they store better. Like, it's up to y'all. If y'all want to try to, like, recreate the Irish famine, maybe potatoes are the way to go. I would actually say, like, seriously, if you're going to grow potatoes, don't grow, like, the potatoes you can buy at the store. Grow something unique if you're going to grow, like, a potato. Grow, like, some Peruvian purple shit or something. I don't know.
I grow the ones I get at the farmer's market, and I get enough for potatoes for us every year.
Okay.
And it's just a tiny amount because it's Thanksgiving and Christmas mashed potatoes.
Okay.
So, and I get the blight on them every year. So I still get potatoes, but it didn't even occur to me this year to throw aspirin in with them.
It probably would help. I mean, it definitely helps with, so it doesn't make blight not happen when you use it with tomatoes. What it does is it makes the tomato plant survive the blight. Like, you still get blight. Like, what ends up with me is I end up with, like, blight down low on the plant, and then it seems like once it kicks in, the rest of the plant never gets blight. So it basically makes late blight act like early blight, if that makes any sense.
This year, and I'm afraid to say this out loud, but I'm going to say it because now it's going to happen. I started my seedlings, which I do the hydroponic sort of method where I have them in net cups and then I transplant them into soil. But I added soil from the garden into that whole system. And I have, and then of course, aspirin from the get-go. And my thought was the beneficial bacteria are there if I put the soil in with it. And I haven't had any sign of any blight this year. And I'm like, now I've said it, so I'm going away for a while right now, and I'll come back and probably. And we had a really wet year. So usually in a wet year, by now, we already have, like, blight everywhere.
Okay.
But not this year. Not even in my garden. Like, the hydro system usually is more resistant anyway, but not even in the garden.
That's great.
Well, I also think it's because the soil's been improving over the last 4 or 5 years here.
Yeah, and the reason you have less blight in a aquaponic system is the blight fungus is a soil-borne fungus, so it probably has a harder time eking out a living in an ebb and flow bed over time compared to being in the soil. One of the reasons we have such a struggle with blight here is blight in the shallow part of the soil, when you get a good hard freeze, it will kill the fungus. It's very, like, the best tomato year I've ever had was the spring following the big freeze. Like, when it got down to, like, 7 below 0, like, all of a sudden, the blight was knocked back for a couple seasons. And now it's really kind of coming back. I do want to say real, Tim Riley here says Okinawan, and when we're talking about the potatoes, I want to be clear when I say purple skinned. Like, I'm not anti-purple sweet potato, but I'm not talking about purple sweet potato. I'm talking about purple skinned sweet potato as your substitute for white potato. The flesh is actually like a yellowish tinge thing, and they exist in flavor profile somewhere between like an Irish potato and a sweet potato. They're not as sweet, and they make amazing fries. I'll just say that we make like twice a year. We do those as a treat, and they are amazing. I didn't grow any this year, by the way, so I don't get to talk shit this year.
Tim Riley right there is your secret weapon that I think a lot of people don't know exists. That dude has studied and worked close with a lot of the guys that are top in this industry for permaculture and design stuff. and is able to present. I don't know if he's got a photographic memory or he's just well rehearsed. But when that dude, like, we've had a lot of big name guys out here do tree planting. And when Tim just did tree planting, man, he took all of it and composed it all together and put in a bunch of pieces that I hadn't heard from other guys. And the trees doing best on the property are trees that Tim put in. Like, I talk to that dude a lot. He shows up at a lot of our stuff, and that guy is a wealth of knowledge. And everybody in here, you have access to him. If you ask him questions, he will answer you.
Yep. Maybe he should speak at Self-Reliance Festival.
He should. He absolutely should.
Tim, reach out to me, because I got a spot for you, actually.
Does Builder of Castles actually build castles?
I think he's a stonework guy.
Have I ever met him? Has he been here?
He's here all the time.
Have you been to the compound? Because if not,
I'd like to meet that guy.
Come to Self-Reliance Festival in October.
He might be just like a carpenter that makes houses. I don't remember. But there was a guy I had all the time that did stonework, but I think he was younger than this guy.
Yes, I have.
Tell us the truth, bro. What do you build? Are you a stone dude?
It's a case where we've met somebody and we're like, we don't know who you are online.
Yeah.
If anybody listening to this is in Canada, Iridium Group is in Canada. He has a sale going on a bunch of his products for Canada Day, or did. You guys should know that dude. He spoke at SRF several times. He's been here many times. He's a friend of mine in real life. You guys should check him out.
Yep. He's a good dude. Okay. We've got a person who's having trouble with sprouting grain for rabbits and getting mold on it. The thing I learned to do from Jack was use chamomile in the water and then put a fan. You can put a fan on it. If you have standing air, you're more likely to get mold.
Guys,
if you're in an environment that's already moldy, like a basement, that could be adding to it too.
Are we talking about fodder? I know guys doing microgreens and fodder. I know a lot of people aren't going to like this. Cap full of bleach in your system.
It works.
It works.
I was going to say it if you didn't.
Hydrogen peroxide also. I've heard that one.
Yep.
Yeah. You cap full of bleach in a 5-gallon bucket, and by the time you're feeding it, the chlorine's off-gassed. We can't be afraid of every chemical because you drink dihydrogen monoxide every day.
Yep.
Like, it's just, if it was chloramine, like in your tap water, and so the same person that won't want to use it will be using tap water that has chloramine
not
in it.
Only
another
that,
way, right?
Not only that, you got chloramine, you got bromine. Like, we used to be able to take 2 pitchers of water and off-gas the chlorine. You can no longer
can't do that
anymore. If you guys are drinking tap water, you are literally poisoning yourself. Chlorine, you can make chlorine from salt and electrical charge, and water will make chlorine.
Correct. The other thing is what Nicole was saying, though, about the chamomile. That does work if it's not if you have a small problem with it, it knocks it right out. And you can buy, like, a huge bag, like a 2-pound bag of chamomile, and it takes literally, like, a small pinch per bucket. And then if you are selling product, like, I put, like, when we were selling heavy, when we were selling the restaurants and everything, when we were doing, like, 200 dozen a month in sales, we would put, like, chamomile infused feed is what we feed our birds. Like, and so you're selling to people that are sometimes buying for emotional reasons. So you market, like, I'm doing it for one reason, but if it makes you buy, I'll point out that I'm doing it.
People usually buy for emotional reasons.
Yep.
Not sometimes.
Karens always buy for emotional reasons.
Builder of Castles. When I was in Oceanside, do I remember a hobby store run by JD? I do. Why do I remember that? I do vaguely remember that. Yeah, you have to filter tap water, guys. City municipal water is literally – I have buddies that work for the municipal water departments, and they don't drink the city water. It just kills the worst shit in there.
You know, a lot of the fluoride that they're putting in your water is industrial waste from fucking China, literally scraped out of smokestacks.
It's not the stuff your dentist uses.
And if you fucking dumped a fucking shot glass of it into a creek, the EPA would do your ass up for freaking poisoning the environment.
An amount of fluoride the size toothpaste, the size of a BB, will kill you. All of your toothpaste with fluoride has a poison control number on each individual tube.
Yep. That's why it says don't swallow and use only a pea-sized amount at a time. That's why it says that. It's a toxin. And people that are like, but natural fluoride's good for you. So Go eat some, yeah. What is this shit, castor beans? Go eat some castor beans. It's all natural, right?
People say that about sugar, too.
Or go eat some manioc without doing the shit, right?
Castor beans make something called ricin.
Ricin, like one of the most deadly toxins known to man.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
You know, asbestos is natural also.
Yeah. Oh, manioc, which is, I can't think of the other name for it, but it's one of the most eaten crops in the world. It grows a big taproot. And if it's not processed properly, you literally kill yourself from cyanide.
There are towns all over the world that are completely abandoned and shut down because they were using asbestos in those towns. They used to use it for children's playgrounds in the 50s because they were starting to realize that smoking cigarettes caused cancer. There were brands of cigarettes that were using asbestos as the filters.
Cassava is the other name for what I was trying to think of, by the way. Cassava is like one of manioc is also known as cassava, and it's like Africa, South America, like staple crop. And there's a way that they like they squeeze it out, they hang it up, and then they make a flour out of it, and they make like a flatbread. Well, if you just make a flatbread out of that shit and you don't do the other part, you will fucking die. And I mean, you don't have to like a couple handfuls will kill you dead as fuck. It's pure cyanide.
Isn't it always fun to think how people figured that one out?
Yeah, somebody fucking was like, you know,
I'm really hungry.
Why don't you? We did something different with this batch. Why don't you try it and we'll see how it goes?
I like when people are like, you can eat this like a pokeweed salad, right? You
pokeweed.
Can eat pokeweed salad. You have to. You gotta boil it and then you gotta grind it up. I'm like, man, I can
three
go.
Times.
Eat all,
just
I,
boil it and rinse it three times.
I can go eat everywhere pokeweed's growing. There's some other shit I can eat without it.
Yes.
We grow pokeweed. We keep it for the berries. Like, we have it, like, we actually fertilize it. I put rabbit
manure. What do you do with the berries?
You'd have to look into it. I'll tell you what it's about.
I got you.
There are some cures, and it does seem to actually do some things. But
okay.
Every time, I guarantee there's somebody over on the side, like, it'll kill you right now, deader than a doornail.
Don't go eating a handful of the berries.
No.
Yeah, you gotta look into it for yourself and decide if it's what you want to do.
I've decided with diet, if I have to do more than take it and eat it for it to be safe, that it's probably not human food.
Yeah, they say I got a friend that's predisposed to colon cancer. Like, he has it in his history, right?
Yeah.
And they say that if you eat frozen pokeberries, you want to start and wean your way up, but you don't chew them up. If you chew the seeds up, they will kill you. But the seed is in the berry. If you swallow the berry and pass it through your body, you actually excrete the seed. And there's a lot of cases out. I mean, like thousands of cases out there.
Really?
Where certain types of internal cancers have gone away literally from eating these berries.
It's a natural form of chemotherapy.
It is.
Because all chemotherapy
without the other problems.
All the chemo means is chemical. It's chemical therapy. That's what it is. Like.
Yeah, the farmers here will eat it when the berries come on, like one berry.
Uh-huh.
They call it a tonic.
Okay.
So I have not asked them if that specifically means it purges as well, but
I'll stick to my goji berries.
Yeah.
I don't mind eating things that kill you if you don't handle them.
Cherries, man. I love cherries. Those are, but don't eat too many of those at once either.
Well, what is it? Apricot pit or something is like vitamin D something or whatever, K something that's supposed to be an anti-carcinogenic and they made it illegal.
Oh, there's a dude in prison right now. It's a very big popular case that there's a dude in prison over apricot seeds making a claim that it cures certain types of cancers.
And there seems to be a lot of evidence that he's right.
There's a lot. Same with cherries.
No, the FDA.
But he's not a doctor,
right? There's evidence that says the man you already arrested is correct.
Same with cherries. There's some cases where the FDA came in and chainsawed down entire cherry orchards because the guy who had the orchards had a link on his website to another company that claimed that they could make a product from cherry seeds that cured certain types of cancers. And there was like this guy had never even met the other guy.
So did shit like that just all get wiped out by a SCOTUS decision?
Well,
the Chevron deference case,
they're saying
right?
18,000 different laws. 18,000 is what this is going to unravel if they actually unravel it, right?
That's
I think a lot of people are just going to ignore it. Like you and I, could we fight that fight? Fuck no. It would destroy our entire lives. We would be in prison waiting for something to happen.
I mean, this is a big deal. This Chevron deference thing is a huge deal. And all the people telling horror stories, like, so where people, like, rolling over and dying every 5 minutes in 1983? No. Then shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because this didn't happen until 84. So if society was, like, all dying in 1983, if we were just, like, throwing, like, dead babies out windows in 1983, I would say maybe you have a point. But the fact that 1983 was a pretty good year, I have to say that we probably don't need this. But what that is for people who didn't hear about this yet, because this is probably the biggest decision to come out of the Supreme Court in a long time, it's completely counter to common law. So one of the principles of common law is if John and I have a contract with each other, and John wrote the contract, and there's ambiguity in the contract, it could be interpreted two different ways. The court is supposed to side with me
always,
to my advantage, because he drafted the contract, so any ambiguity in the contract should benefit the party that did not draft it. This is centuries-old common law that our entire system of law is based on, out of England. Well, who drafted the contract when Congress passes a law? The state.
Congress, yeah.
Right? So any ambiguity in the law should benefit the party, the people, who did not draft it. And that's basically the true basis of this Supreme Court decision. Maybe I miss my calling as a lawyer, except I think I'd be miserable.
Yeah, and people don't get what it means.
So, I mean, that's basic premise. And that should be the Constitution, too. The Constitution is a contract between the state, the states, and the people. Not the state, the super state. The federal government is not party to the contract that is the Constitution. And I'll prove it. They didn't exist when it was established. How can something that doesn't exist be party to a contract? The contract created the federal government as we know it today. So the states got together, drafted the Constitution, ratified it, creating the state. It'd be like the three of us creating an LLC together. The LLC is not party to the contract. The three of us are. The LLC is the result of the contract. So the Constitution should be interpreted the same way. Any ambiguity in the Constitution should benefit the people because we didn't draft it. Fucking states did. And the federal government should be told to sod off with their opinion because they're the servant of the states in the contract that is the Constitution.
And what this basically means is your bureaucrats that are interpreting their directives.
Correct.
If they are basically interpreting something ambiguous in a way that could be construed to your benefit and they're not interpreting it to your benefit, in theory, you can now push back on that and it would go in your favor. And it'll be cool to see this get tested next.
Correct. Like Berkey would be a perfect example. Berkey right now is dealing with this bullshit from the EPA, and the EPA said there's a pesticide and they're regulating Berkey filters as a pesticide. And their justification is there's silver in the filters. And since silver can be used to kill things, it's a pesticide. Well, there's a lot of ambiguity in a law that would allow that. So
I wear a pesticide in my ears sometimes.
I guess, yeah. But you don't consume it, right? So this is something you consume.
I mean, it's absorbing into the skin.
Yeah, but you're not consuming it, right? So the FDA is saying that you consume it, and therefore there's a pesticide in it and needs to be regulated. Well, they already had – Berkey was doing pretty good in their case, from my understanding. Well, this just put steroids on the Berkey side because some bureaucrat – after this shit has existed for how many decades, decided we're just going to say it's a pesticide now. This is exactly what Chevron deference was allowing, and its removal should disallow it. Like, now it's up to the government to prove you violated the law instead of just saying, according to us, you're violating the law. Like, that's the actual crux of the decision. Like, they can still say you're breaking the law. Well, what law and in what way and how does that work? And then you get your day in court. Where right now, the judge in a case would immediately sign off in deference to the Alphabet agency.
Interpretation.
No matter what they said.
Yep, interpretation. I'd like to see how many people have been killed in no-knock warrants during this administration by the ATF and the FBI. I'd like to know what that number is, that whole thing. The Berkey thing is over silver. It's silver impregnated into the filter.
Yep.
So they're saying the silver now has to be classified as a pesticide. Do you guys remember... Art Bell days, back in early 90s, even 80s, hearing about colloidal silver all the time.
Yeah,
colloidal
yeah.
silver generating machines. You could put a silver coin in there and make your own colloidal silver. There was a huge attack on that. Remember when that was? It's the same shit.
It's the same. Well, anything that can benefit us.
Yeah.
And they always take the extreme to push back. Remember the dude that turned himself into a fucking Smurf?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So if this one guy was an idiot and basically lived on colloidal silver for a decade
which
and turned
changed
himself
the
into
color
a fucking
of his
Smurf,
skin.
Right?
Yeah.
That means nobody can have it. Same thing with Comfrey, right? You know about the trials with Comfrey? They fed these fucking rats Comfrey till they blew up their livers. But they were not feeding them Comfrey. They were feeding them an extract. And the equivalence over 90 days was a human being eating 60,000 fucking leaves of Comfrey. I don't think I've eaten 60,000 leaves of anything in my life.
Look into statins. Look at the study right now. Anybody on statins, just type it in and look at the original information when they said statins work. I believe it was a test from 1964. It was inconclusive, and that is what is still stated today. They are prescribing statins. And then look into statins and the gray areas in brain tissue and the link with Alzheimer's and dementia from statins. California wanted to put statins in the water supply in 2000s. Like, they wanted to pump it in forever. They also wanted to put Prozac in the water supply. Like, if you have a loved one or you are on statins, you really should look into this.
So on the carpal tunnel question, which John already answered in text, anything to add to what John said on ways to deal with carpal tunnel separate from surgery?
My wife had surgery and was cutting hair the next day. They went in. The test for it is way worse than the actual surgery. I have carpal tunnel. I have not had surgery. I probably will. BPC-157, TB-500, those are peptides. Peptides are basically parts of protein that they can now identify. They're scientifically made, laboratory made, but they are typically a powder. You're going to reconstitute it with a sterile water, hydrostatic water, and it's going to be an injectable. If you're not familiar with these things, I'm not telling you go use them. I'm not telling you to take them. Simply take those three words, those three substances I gave you, type them into YouTube and watch some videos and see what doctors and what the scientists specific studies. There's a lot of guys out there that are talking about these. Huberman talks about them quite a bit. Brecka talks about them quite a bit. Joe Rogan's spoken about these three substances a lot.
So go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, I am pretty anti-modern medicine in a lot of ways. Surgery for mechanical issues makes a lot of sense to me. I came out of the telecom space. A lot of guys that I came up with were old school splicers, and those guys are splicing 600, 900 pair cables all day long in a hole like this. And carpal tunnel is rampant in that space. Every one of them that had that surgery told me, I wish I would have done it sooner.
Yeah, my elbow goes numb. My thumb is always numb. My shoulder hurts all the way through. But anytime the FDA comes out and says, hey, we're taking these things away from you, it's almost like a magnet. I have to look at it and research it. And they are trying to ban all of these peptides.
Yeah.
They made morphine illegal.
Yeah.
Remember when they did that like 10 years ago and all the hospice places are like, you've taken away our only tool that makes people not scream in pain at the end.
But what did they give you in place, right?
Yeah, nothing that worked as well.
It was laudanum and then heroin and then cocaine. They always replace it with something else once the patents are expired.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the morphine thing too. Like, well, it has long-term addiction. These are fucking people dying during hospice.
Yeah,
a person in hospice should be able to have anything.
Smoke all
that
the
makes
weed.
Their life better.
Yeah.
Anything.
Whatever.
Like, there's no long-term outlook.
Eat the
once
steak.
You enter that stage of life. If it makes you able to eat, you should have it. If it makes you not hurt, you should have it. If it makes you have nice dreams, I don't care. Like, somebody to deny somebody comfort who is at the end stage of their life is one of the most freaking. I mean, they need the pedo pulper treatment. Like, anybody that would stand in the way of a dying person using anything that makes their life more comfortable in the end stage, straight in the pedo pulper. You go right in there with them.
keep in mind, Hunter Biden referred to his father as Pedo Peter. That was his name for him on the text app when that all got busted out. Bonnie, the carpal tunnel thing, I sew every day. I sew hundreds of hours a week, some weeks, and it's this. It's the scissors. It's this. It's changing the thread off the winder, and it is constant scissors. It's this. And my wife was a hairstylist. It's this. That's what it was. So as far as preventing, I totally understand what you're saying, and if you're in a position to do that, but that's not ever going to happen where I continue to do my job.
Somebody needs to send Jack a graphic for the pedo chipper or
no,
John.
Send it to John. John
send it to John. John will know what to do with it.
We already have it. We have it.
Mulch.
Mulch.
Hey, it's biologically active mulch.
Yeah, it all makes compost.
Well, you put it compost through the pigs, and then the pigs process it into manure, and then you make compost.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we're coming up.
And the words of
Cletus
from The Simpsons, if anybody tells you a pig won't bite off a finger, they's lying.
Well, if we're talking Cletus, we got to go with most folks won't eat a skunk. But then again, some folks will. It's Cletus, the slack-jawed yokel.
There you go.
That's with the three-eyed fish.
Yep.
LSD is Schedule 1, even though it's been used successfully in clinical settings. It's not about if it works.
They're finally talking about taking cannabis off Schedule 1, which was the dumbest thing ever done, in my opinion, by the FDA.
Well, let's talk about letting all the people out of prison in the states that are in prison for cannabis where the states are legal.
Great idea, John. It would totally save on the budget with the prisons. And
what
they no longer
say,
broke the law.
What they'll say, and I don't know if this is true, is that almost nobody's in jail for the possession of cannabis. They're in jail for the intent to distribute or for distribution, which I don't know if that's true or not. But I would still say they should still be free.
Here's a couple things a lot of people might not know. In the prison system, all federal prisons have a factory. They pay those dudes 43 cents a day. When you run in a prison system factory, you make products that have to be sold on a GSA schedule. So if you are a federal agency, law enforcement agency, a lot of times you have to buy off GSA schedule. Unicor is one of those factories. There's different ones. Lockers, Lompoc made lockers and street signs. So when a federal agency wanted lockers or anything like a locker, they had to buy off GSA. The GSA price is literally three times what you could buy at retail from Office Depot or Office, any of those places. So they're paying three times the price to get them. They're using slave labor to make them. And then the people running those corporations, they get a profit off of the top of those. So those guys get a huge incentive to keep those people, and they pay those politicians off. That was the whole thing with Kamala Harris and Biden's super predators is what he called them.
Yeah.
Those people all went into the prison systems. The prisons all have factories, and the factories pay they sell their product way too much, and the government has to buy them from those factories.
Well, I do know there were three big lobbies that have been fighting cannabis legalization. And they are prison lobby, the alcohol lobby, and the pharmaceutical lobby.
Yeah.
Those are the three biggest opponents to legalizing cannabis.
But
not, you know, moms demand action or some shit like that. No, it's freaking the people that see it as competitive. Like, I say this all the time. People think that corporations fight regulation. Corporations create regulation. They don't pay lobbyists to oppose regulation. They employ lobbyists to write legislation, hand it to a Congress clown, and say, put your name on this. Because if you're a giant company, you love regulation because your cost of that regulation is a rounding error on your balance sheet, and people our size can't afford it.
Yeah, wasn't Anheuser-Busch one of the biggest donors to that anti-weed thing? And then Anheuser-Busch is also putting out a weed and an energy drink, I thought, that actually has cannabis in it now. They're going to become like the oil companies, right? An oil company is no longer an oil company. It's now an energy company, and they're no longer doing oil. They're all doing, you know, regenerative solar bullshit. That's what these alcohol companies will become. They will become a sedation or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, well, that's happening right now. There's tons of this. Here's one brand that's a big deal right now, Wink, W-Y-N-K, seltzer with THC instead of alcohol.
There we go.
So, I mean, that's happening right now. I mean, that's
yeah.
You wanna,
He said, it sounds like how the schools buy books. Yeah, if you want to look at the fucking endowments for colleges and the school book shit, holy shit, that's where the money's at.
Why is there such thing as a hard copy textbook in the public education system right now? It doesn't make any sense other than grifting, right? Like, why is it, like, every kid has a device now?
Because right? Pelican has a good lobby.
And if you wanted, like, even if you wanted to pay for it, like, you could give every kid every 5 years in school, like grade school, middle school, high school, a tablet for way less money than the cost of printed textbooks. And you could always have the most updated information available to your students when something changes. But no, we can't do that because we would ruin the textbook grift. And the college is worse because John's a professor. Well, all he has to do is write a textbook and get it mandated in several colleges, and he retires for life on roll.
$150 book for this $150
book that wouldn't sell for fucking $15 on Amazon.
Yep, and that's how they would rewrite history.
Yeah.
That's how they rewrote history.
When I was teaching, we had to choose hardcover books for whatever to use for 8 years. Every 8 years, you got to choose a new book, which meant whatever information was wrong in the book, even if you knew it was wrong on day one, you were stuck with that for 8 years. And there was always stuff wrong. It was always like, I'm teaching this class, but on page 47, here's the handout that I made to correct the information that's wrong, particularly in the history classes.
So you just gave me a flashback because I have this freaky memory where I remember shit in a weird way. I remember being eighth grade science class and opening a book and an infographic that said we would be completely out of oil, not peak oil, out of oil in 35 years. It would have been 1983. Did that, because that's when I would have been in eighth grade. And so I knew enough to, like, holy fuck. So I turned to the front of the book, copyright 1978. I can still see it in my head. And I'm sitting there doing math, and the teacher comes over, and she thinks I'm doing my typical thing, is not paying attention and doodling and shit. So she's ready to jump down my throat, and she sees I'm actually working out, like, well, what does that mean? What year are we out of oil? And so she's like, oh, good. And I told her my dad owned a gas station at the time, and, like, I was worried about it and all. So I go home, and I show my dad the book. He picks it up. He goes like this, shit, throws it to the side. And he's like, they're full of shit. They've been saying that forever. He said, go research it. Back then, you had to go to a library to research it.
Yep.
And he's like, look for something called, like, all he told me was look for something called known reserves. And even back then, you could go look up in a library in a public school and find out this book was wrong. And by the way, if you do the math, like, we should have no oil left at all right now.
We did that shirt a couple of weeks ago. It said out of oil, polar ice caps, ozone layer. Yeah, where'd that hole in the ozone layer go? What happened with that?
I don't know. I remember in the 80s sitting in front of the TV, because there were like six channels, and watching these news reports and these experts come in with computer models predicting a new ice age.
Yep.
Over and over and over again, trying to scare the shit out of new ice age. There's a documentary from the 70s with Leonard Nimoy narrating about the coming ice age.
Go look at Ellis Island. Go look at Ellis Island.
Sometime in high school, the ice age turned to global warming.
Yeah. Yeah. It works on people. When I did the first or second Permaculture Voices conference, there was a bunch of purple breeder hippie permaculturists there. And we were sitting around this fire pit. It was really cool. And this one dude goes, man, everybody's like 20 years old. Like, people just don't understand, man. In 10 years, and he points down at the harbor where the water is, in 10 years, that water is going to be up here. It was like 8 feet. 8 feet. I'm like, dude, even your gods at IPCC say you're talking about a 2-inch rise. That's 8 feet. And I wish I would have made a bet with that dude, like signed contract. Like, we'll come back in 10 years. And if that water's not up here, you owe me Bitcoin.
Yeah, Martha's Vineyard, all that property still increases in value. If you look at Ellis Island, that little medallion right there, the Statue of Liberty, all those levels are still
when
there.
You show people pictures like that from 100 years ago and today, they always say, well, that was low tide, this is high tide. Show me a picture of it at fucking high tide then. In both, like, you're just grasping at straws. Why are all these fucking billionaires who tell us we need to worry about climate change and rising oceans always buying oceanfront property? Every single one of these motherfuckers owns like three beach houses.
Yep.
Like, if I was a billionaire and I really thought the oceans were going to rise, like, all my real estate would be in the mountains. right? It would be in Colorado, Montana, Tennessee.
At least at the new shoreline.
Yeah, it would be like, yeah, let's figure out where the Arizona, you know, when is Arizona going to have oceanfront property? Like, that's where to pre-position your, like, they're full of shit and they know it, or they wouldn't be doing this.
You have all your insurance companies dropping people's insurance over hail damage on their roofs, but they're still continuing to insure all that waterfront property.
Yep. Well, guys, we've been going 2 hours. We ready to do once around the horn?
Sure.
All right, Jack, you get to start this time.
I am Jack Spirko. If you do not know that, you can check out my website at thesurvivalpodcast.com, or you can go to tspc.co. You can connect with me on all sorts of social media, including Noster, which is where they cannot censor you. To find that, when you're on my website, go to Get Social. Again, to get to my website, tspc.co will get you there. I have done over 3,500 podcast episodes dating back to 2008, and if you are interested in anything we talked about today, or even that we didn't, that's in anywhere in this space, I guarantee you we've covered it many times.
Well, happy July, folks. I'm Nicole Soss. You can find more about me at NicoleSoss.com. But July is early bird month for the Self-Reliance Festival. We do a really cool event at John Willis's compound at Special Operations Equipment in Camden, Tennessee. And this time it's October 5th and 6th, Saturday, Sunday. Jack Spirko will be there speaking. John will speak. Amanda Willis will speak. We've got a whole bunch of really cool people coming in. We've got Zach from An American Homestead, Bear Independent. And tickets are at an all-time low right now, but that's going to change on August 1st. So head over to selfreliancefestival.com to grab your tickets. And think about a workshop as well. Sonny Pazikas is doing Escapeology on Thursday. He's doing a conflict de-escalation on Friday. We're putting together Self-Reliance Boot Camp on Friday, where you'll have about 7 hours of instruction, and it starts with processing a rabbit, and then we're cooking that for lunch. So we'll be walking through a bunch of different skills, homesteading and survival skills, and I'm pretty sure there will be a homestead medical suturing class as well. That's all over at selfreliancefestival.com. John, you get to close this out today because you haven't done that in a while.
John Willis from Special Operations Equipment, SOETacticalGear.com is my website. I've got 5,000 videos on YouTube here. I do 6 video series as well as 2 full-length video podcasts every week. I do a live every night at 9 o'clock. You can join on. We can talk about anything that you guys want to talk about on this YouTube channel, my YouTube channel. We're having a party July 13th here. Everybody is welcome. If you're a vendor, if you have a product or a skill, something that you want to offer or sell, reach out directly. There's no fee for any of that. Anybody can come. We never know who's showing up, and it's always something bigger than it ever has been. So show up, and everybody's invited.
And I hear a rumor, Nicole, that some awesome chick named Nicole Soss is going to be speaking there too.
Yep.
I think you left that out.
At both of them. That's a given. That's a given.
Yeah, we'll have some fun talks. All right,
yeah, Nicole,
guys.
Nicole will be at the party also.
I will be at the party. See you guys soon.
Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.